Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, and welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. How's everybody doing? Hope everybody's having a great, fantastic time. Man, whew, I just barely made it right now, rushing down the freeway, trying to get over here for Leaving the Ring Radio. Still trying to gather my thoughts here so that we can start the show. I know last week we didn't do a show, and folks, you know, complaining about it, and we apologize. This job has been killing me, man. I got to admit it. Job's been killing me. It's been keeping me out a lot later than I expected and wanted to have me out there, because it started to interrupt the Leaving the Ring flow. But we're starting to get things locked down. I got the job to agree to allow me to get off a little earlier so that I can get here and we can do our 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leaving the Ring. So we got a lot of stuff to catch up with. We got a lot of things to talk about. It's getting closer to the Chad Dawson and Andre Ward fight. It's getting closer to the Sergio Martinez and Julio Cesar Chavez fight. It's getting closer to the Canelo Alvarez fight and Josecito fight. So a lot of things to talk about. Darley Perez, who fought last week, not this past week, but last week when we were supposed to air on Thursday night. And we did talk about his, returning the ring on ESPN. We were excited. I got to tell you, I wasn't too impressed by him. The kid kind of, you know, dropped the ball. He wasn't really doing a whole lot that we expected him to do, you know, and he had Baja Mama Jama. Remember that? I mean, I don't know to you guys, man, but that to me sounded more like of a Stevie Wonder jam. You know, that name, that it sounds like it came from a Stevie Wonder song, Mama Jama. And, I mean, look, Darley Perez was doing his thing. He does great when he goes to the body, but you have to be in front of him. You know, I mean, he's a fighter who needs to really have a guy that wants to be a brave heart and stand there and trade with you. So either his team recognize that they need a small ring for this kid every time out he gets in, or they need to start stepping him up. Even though he got an eighth round knockdown, a knockout came from an uppercut. It's still, you know, he's got some work to do. He really does. You know, I mean, Baja was really circling him. He was making Perez's right hand not be an effect. He was making Perez kind of search for him, and he really, what he did to Perez was he kind of showed us that he can't be mobile in box, that he needs to sit on his punches. He needs to learn how to cut the ring off, because there's a huge problem there. There's a real, real huge problem for Perez. So that's something he has got to go back. He's got to look at, you know. And, you know, the thing, too, with Baja is that he tended to drag his front foot, which gave time to Perez, too. I mean, if you guys go back and watch that fight, that front foot, when he was circling, he did well. But when he got tired, he started to drag it. He started to make that distance be closer and easier for Perez to kind of step in and make his punches be effective, you know. And that was a really contribute to Baja's dragging on his foot, not having that conditioning. In a lot of ways, to me, Perez probably didn't really have the tools, if Baja had the stamina, to outlast him, circle him, box him. Perez, to me, in those first couple of rounds, he kind of showed how vulnerable he is to a mover. You know, another thing that I was noticing with Darley Perez, too, you know, and I know some folks right now, they're tuning in, they're probably thinking that, you know, I'm bagging on Darley Perez. a whole lot, but as a prospect, a talented prospect, a guy that I really, really was high on, there was something there that was lacking. And that lack was maybe because of the fact he's not fighting enough. You know, his team is not looking enough. And they're concentrating. And this could be the thing, too. When I was talking about how he doesn't know how to cut off the ring, it could be a lot of scenarios. One of the scenarios that I was thinking was whether I got to find out where he's training at, first off. You know, it could be that he's fighting in a very small ring. And that happens to fighters. You know, when they fight in a small ring, they end up not learning how to be mobile and box. They learn how not to cut off the ring. They end up finding a sparring partner that's going to end up standing there and trading with them. You know, when I went down and saw Antonio Margarito and Soto Carras, this is a couple years back, they had a very small ring. I can't remember the size. I think it was like 16 by 16. That's a, you know, that's not that small, but it's a pretty small ring, you know, compared to some rings that are 24 by 24. I don't know how big that one ring was with Darlie Perez and Mama Jama, but it seemed pretty large. It was so large that Baja was able to keep Perez outpointed. It was large enough to keep Perez thinking and not really able to use his feet to close that distance. So there's some things there that obviously you saw that he needs work. So the next guy, looking at that fight card, he can go back and ask for that bigger ring and then really concentrate on circling, keeping Perez moving and moving. Because there's a one thing, too, that Perez does, too, where he locks that front knee. And then he doesn't push off his back leg when he jabs. He kind of locks it, and he stays in the same place. So it wasn't one thing that I saw with Perez. It was a whole lot of stuff in his arsenal that I was sitting back and going, there's a big problem here. This is something that really needs attention to. So right now, Gabriel's telling me he's running late. We're going to be having Alfredo Angulo coming. Okay, so I wasn't even aware that I got dropped off here on Leaving the Ring, so I apologize. Anyways, I was saying this, that Gabriel Montoya is running a little late. We're going to have Alfredo Angulo call in. You know, they had a press conference for him on Tuesday, and, you know, since being released from jail from the immigration, and it's going to be, you know, his first time in a while that he's really spoken to anybody. So we're going to have a chance to hear his side of the story. What happened with the immigration, what was the big problem there, being in there and now being released, what are his plans, and how does it feel to be back? And has he got back into the boxing ring? You know, I know it's a few days since he's been released, but there's a lot of questions that fight fans and ourselves want to know here on the Leaving the Ring. Let's pass in some fight fans who want to talk boxing, 347-215-7598. You can call in right now. Let's talk some boxing. Like I said, Gabriel Montoya's running a little late. I was running a little late. Running behind schedule here, trying to get here into the office so that I can log in and we can get the switchboard up so we can talk some boxing on Leaving the Ring. So let's get CT. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, Dave? How you doing?
I'm doing good, brother. I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
All right. I want to talk about that Darling Perez fight. I agree with you 100%. I was high on him as well. I think it had a little bit maybe to do with Rust, but just the style of that guy. If you could help me out with the guy's name again, what's his name?
It was Mama Jama.
Mama Jama, yeah. Yeah, I was watching the fight with this female friend of mine, and even she was like, damn, he's getting his ass whipped. And
right.
I just saw the guy, you know, giving Perez a lot of angles, movement, and that left was just going straight down the middle, giving Perez a lot of trouble, and made him like, you know, hesitate a lot to come in and throw his punches. And like you were saying, luckily for Perez, I forgot the guy's
Mama
name
Jama.
Again. Mama Jama. You know, he gassed out a little bit towards the end, and that helped Perez out. But if Perez is going to, you know, be high on himself as a prospect and up-and-coming lightweight, I think he needs some things to work on. Like you said, cutting off the ring. putting punches together a little bit better. You know, just I saw a lot of flaws. And he needs to definitely work on some things if he wants to be up there with the rest of the lightweight division.
You know, this is the sad part about it. It is that with Mama Jama, you know, this is my sign that Mama Jama's confidence was really high from that first all the way down. I think it was like to the fourth or fifth, you know, his confidence. I think this finally kicked in. His legs started to tire out around that fifth round. It really wasn't due to what Perez was doing to him. It was more contribute to what Baja was doing to himself, you know, the circling, keeping himself, you know, at a good distance from Perez, and clearly was able to outbox him. And the confidence was there when he was getting next to those ropes. And Baja started to get that sense that when he was close to that ropes, and I'm talking about a foot away, it was an arm length away from his back, the pressure from Perez was never there. He never used his jab to close that distance. He allowed that foot gap for Baja, and that's why Baja would outbox him. But I think with the whole arsenal of Baja was that first round, I think their schedule of fighting Perez was circling him and box him, but I don't think they practiced on the pace. I don't think they practiced enough. I think that they were feeling that Perez was going to put a little bit more on that pedal that allowed Baja to maybe fight in spots, maybe fight off of those ropes. And it didn't happen, so it allowed him to use his legs a little bit more. It allowed him to keep just running in circle after circle. And Perez is lucky. He's really, 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 really lucky that Baja, to me, didn't do enough road work, you know, and turn that allowed Perez to turn it up when Baja started slowing down. And then when Perez started touching that body, as soon as he was able to touch that body, that's when Baja to me started falling apart, you know. And that's why I say Perez really needs to go back. His team really need to, you know, invest in a guy that's going to be either smaller, mobile, and with some hand speed, some good footwork, and make Perez learn how to close that distance. Make Perez learn how to, you know, go after him and able to not lock that front leg when he jabs. Able to show him that, really learn how to turn that left hook. I don't know if you were checking it out, CT, but, man, every time he threw his left hook, his body never turned. It was just his left – it was an arm punch. It was kind of weird. It was really hard to describe, but – it was nasty. It was kind of sad to see a kid that we're really high on as a prospect that he didn't know how to throw a left hook unless you were standing in front of him. That's sad, you know what I mean? That tells me he only knows how to throw a left hook when the punching bag is in front of him, you know? Mm-hmm. So pretty sad there, man. He's got to do something. Carlos Molina, got to tell you, man, that kid's still a fireball, you know? He's calling out Austin Trout, no doubt Trout. I'd like to see that fight. You know, I mean, these are 254 pounders that, you know, a lot of folks are not very high on, but are established. Let's just put it that way. They're established. They're not some of the superstars, but they definitely are established in that division. And to me, those are the guys that are kind of, they actually put in the pavement on the road so that other guys can become superstars off. That meaning that, you know, I don't know about Trout yet. You know, I don't know whether or not he's going to be one of the guys that are going to be a superstar in his division, but he's definitely one of those guys that if you beat him convincingly, you're almost a step closer of being one of the guys, the man in that division.
Yeah, it's funny that you said that, Dave. I actually said that to somebody recently. You know, that's a fight that I want to see. The two fighters that, you know, that should be up there with the upper echelon sub, the junior middleweight division, but they don't get the respect because, you know, for whatever reason, if the you know, they don't get it as much, like, money or, you know, just the style matchup might be wrong for, you know, Canelo or somebody else. Those two fighters, it shouldn't be hard for them to make a fight together because, like you said, they're the two blue-collar type, you know, fighters who deserve a shot, and why not just fight each other? You know,
exactly.
I think Molina definitely deserves another title shot. And Trout needs to prove himself. So
you know, we all know that Carlos the King Molina, my co-host is with us, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, who's running a little late here. We all know that Carlos the King Molina is one of the kids that are definitely they're going to come to fight. They're going to have a game plan. You know, he doesn't have that style that we're all going to go like, ooh, ah. But he does have ring smarts, you know. You know, he's a mauler, but he can box. He's a mauler, but he can think. He's a mauler, and he can be exciting. You know, was he really exciting against Kirtland? To me, it was. To me, he made me go like, ooh, okay, this is a different avenue we haven't seen from him. You know, so, you know, going back, he's a kid that shows me that Austin's going to have to really do his homework because guess what? He is going to get a mauler fighter that has some thinking to his arsenal. So that to me alone tells you that he's there not just to play ball, but he's there to steal bases throughout the game.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think Molina's very, very tricky. You know, like you said, he's got that mauling type style, but he's got little tricky ways about him. Almost like, you know, like a Bernard Hopkins type fighter. You know, he doesn't do one thing exceptionally well, but he does everything very well. He's very fundamental. He's hard hit clean.
It's just not exciting to watch. This is entertainment, and I'm not entertained by him. I haven't been entertained by him. Other than, like, the drama of holy shit, I wonder if they're actually going to give it to him or not. There was drama there for me, but the style, I got to just say. I mean, even just looking at Twitter that night, you know, here we are starving for a fight. We get one, and people were just like, ugh, this isn't, you know. I mean, I respect the skills and the spoiler style, but I was never a John Ruiz guy either, you know. It doesn't do a lot for me. I want to see guys that get in there, risk. They don't have to be, you know, rock 'em, sock 'em robot and let me hit me in the head a million times. But it just seems so safety first to me. It doesn't. It's not what I enjoy. Like the guy I spent at lunch with today, Gennady Golovkin for his media day. That's a dude that's going to be very exciting. They're very excited to have him on HBO because of that. Because he's got one punch knockout power in both hands. He's got very heavy hands. That's somebody I want to. The kind of shuffle, move around, grab you, clinch you, jab you a little bit, it doesn't do a lot for me, you know. And the other guy's trying to make a fight, and you're trying to make something other than.
Well,
you know, that's just me.
No, I mean, some guys prefer tequila, other guys prefer Michael Beer, other guys just want draft, you know. I mean, it just depends on your taste buds here.
I'm a hard-alcohol guy. I always have been.
Right, exactly. CT, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on the hold, okay?
Thank you.
Welcome back. I mean, I know, like I said, we didn't do a show last week, but, you know, we're back, and we got Alfredo Angulo. We're going to be calling in right now here on Leaving the Ring. I believe that's what you're texting me about right now, right, Gabe?
Yeah. You got the number there?
I got the number with me, so let's call in Alfredo Angulo, and let's talk to Alfredo.
Yeah, say what's up. I don't know what he's been up to lately, you know.
Well, he's been...
Who's been kind of busy?
He's been, yeah.
That was kind of funny. This guy, we were there at the thing, and this guy said to me, "Boy, have you heard anything about this?"
Ring back tone while your party is reached.
Have you?
That's one way to start our evening.
Like those old hags. Yeah.
Bueno.
Bueno, puedo hablar con Alfredo Angulo.
Él habla.
Alfredo, ¿cómo estás? David Duenes y Gabriel Montoya con Living in the Ring Radio.
Bien, bien. ¿Cómo están?
Bien, bien, bien. Gabriel, are you there?
I am here. I guess Lucy Hato is with him. We're going to need Lucy to probably translate.
Okay.
I thought she was going to be on the line with him. Beto, this is Gabriel Montoya. Just welcome to the show, man.
Okay, that's fine.
Is that okay? You gonna be able to do that? And for our listeners, this is Lucy Haro. I know you read the article today, Lucy, and I was reticent to give you a title because I think you've, as I described you, you're the glue that kind of bonded together all the resources that Alfredo needed in order to get to where he is today, free in this country on our radio show. Not that wasn't the goal to get him on the radio show, but to get him free. How would you describe yourself to people that ask me that question? What is her role?
I was the head attorney, and I basically made sure that everyone that was on Angulo's team were trustworthy and were capable of helping him, because when his problems emerged in 2010, I was actually creating a scholarship program, scholarship fund that Angulo wanted to do for people, mostly youth in Los Angeles. And all of a sudden, all these articles came out about him and his situation, and he was going to get deported, and he was fighting with Gary, which was all news to me, I think, like everyone else in the boxing community, because I knew Alfredo, I knew Gary, I knew everybody in the boxing community, and I wasn't even aware there were any problems until those articles came out. And so he trusted me, and so I started looking into his problems, and I have to say, there was a lot of people offering help, and Michael Miller was already kind of as a consultant, was someone that Alfredo was looking to also for legal advice. So I just made sure that everybody that was going to be on his team from then on was going to be someone he could trust and that would actually help him instead of, you know, hurt him. And so that's what my role was, really. I do give him legal advice, but he has a boxing attorney manager. That's Michael Miller. I sought guidance from Tom Girardi, a very known attorney in Los Angeles. He was kind of my mentor. And then we went on with looking for the right immigration lawyer, because I think it took about 6 to 8 months to get his paperwork and find out where he was and what the situation was with all his business and legal affairs. So ever since then, that's been my role, really, is to make sure that we had the right team for him, because it did take a lot of us to get, you know, him back on track again.
At any time when you were doing, you know, everything to get things back on track, did it look hopeful? Did it look like this was something that was going to drag out a lot longer? What was your sense and your feeling?
I never thought it was going to take as long as it was going to take. And I believe we thought it would be maybe about 6 months to a year to clarify everything. A lot of things happened in those 2 years. Those articles affected Angulo a lot in every possible way, not just in boxing, but in terms of the way people viewed Angulo. Every time I had to meet with an ICE officer or a government official, they would Google him and cite these articles that came out August and September of 2010. And that's what I think for a while the press really disappointed me, because at that time they were all repeating Gary's story and other stories from other people that used to be on Angulo's team, without ever verifying with Angulo, and so it did do a lot of damage. It took us a while to clean everything up, and I think the biggest triumph for us was at the court last month when the judge said he found Angulo to be a credible person and allowed him to stay here. I think that speaks for itself in regards to what everyone said about him, and it took a long time so the truth could come out. And you know, I don't think that all his problems had to be public the way they were, and I think it shows that there was a lot of untruth said about him. I'd say 90% was untruth.
So that sounds like, I mean, I've dealt with it. We've talked about it quite a bit, having to kind of undo what the media allowed to kind of happen. There was a cover story kind of put out, and everybody went, "Oh, okay," and they kind of trusted. It's kind of the press release culture. Let's get to the man of the hour here. What are his thoughts? I mean, we have. I think the last time we talked to him was before the Gomez fight, and we haven't talked to him really since. How has it been adjusting to being outside? How is he feeling right now?
Let me ask. ¿Cómo te sientes ahorita? Estando fuera la última vez que te hablaron era antes de la pelea de Gomez.
¿Cómo? Bien, tranquilo, y te más acostumbrado después de estar encerrado, que me dio muchísimo mejor.
I feel calm, at peace, especially after being locked up for 7 months. Things couldn't be better.
Wow, I can't believe that he was away for 7 months and he's still able to stay calm and in peace. You know, at any point being in there, you know, taken away. I mean, he's literally just taken away from his family and restricted from the hard work that he's put in himself, how is he able to keep himself in good spirits? And at any point being incarcerated, did those good spirits, were they being broken apart? Did he need to re-find his good spirit in there? Or did he knew all along that this was just a game that he had to play with and he had to be patient about to chessmate himself in life?
Este es el último 7 meses, he tenido muchos problemas y he tenido que estar ahí. ¿Cómo puedes todavía mantener una posición positiva? Habían momentos que tú te sentías perdido o frustrado, algo que, ¿cómo es que agarraste este momento para durar estos momentos?
No, sí me sentí frustrado, es obvio, porque el director de ese lugar se hizo todo para que mi proceso fuera muchísimo más largo, para negarme todo lo que yo pedía, como los tenis shoes y todo. Sí, sí fue un poco frustrante, pero al darme la tarea de poder ayudar a la gente que estaba ahí detenida, eso sacó la frustración de mi cabeza, el poder ayudar a tantos detenidos que hay en ese lugar.
There were many moments that were very frustrating, that I didn't know what to do, especially when the director would go out of his way to make my life harder. For example, not allowing me to have tennis shoes for several months. I would get frustrated, but the work of helping the other detainees there made it better. It made it tolerable. So I just focused on that and trying to survive the situation.
There was something that he said in the video interview done by Damon Bingham. Talked about how he had asked, why me, why now? You know, why is this happening? And then he realized that all the people around him that needed help was the reason that he was inside. How long did it take him to kind of realize that?
En la entrevista con Damon Bingham, dices que muchas veces te preguntabas por qué yo, porque estoy encerrado. Y también dijiste que te realizaste un día que era por la otra gente que está ahí, para ayudarles a ellos y entenderles a ellos. ¿Cuánto tiempo demoró para realizar eso?
Para entenderlo me costó 2 semanas.
To understand it took about 2 weeks.
Después de eso ya fue cuando llegaba mi abogado a visitarme y pues venía a hablarme de mi caso, pero le decía, espérame, ahorita hablamos de mi caso primero. Y no hay que hablar de este caso, mira, pues te están haciendo esto y esto mal, ¿qué podemos hacer para que salga bien?
And then it was every time my attorneys came, I would give them another task. I'd say, look, there's this person in here, they're not doing things right, he doesn't have right representation, what can we do to help them? And so I would remember, this is why I'm here.
How long did it take you to realize that they're not going to let me out of here? And what did that feel like, kind of knowing, like, wait a minute, like, this was supposed to be very fast, I was going to get bonded, and then I'd be released, and now I'm still here?
¿Cuánto tiempo te demoró que ellos no te iban a dejar libre? Yo podría haber agarrado el bond y no me lo han dado todavía y todavía estoy aquí. ¿Cuánto tiempo te realizó? ¿Cómo lo sabes que estás preparado ahí?
Ya no me importaba porque ya cuando llegué ahí y pasaron esas 2 semanas y que al tercer día él le había dicho a mi abogado que yo no iba... Él nunca me iba a dejar salir, yo ya sabía desde el tercer día que eso iba a pasar bastante tiempo para poder salir de ese lugar, así que...
I think from the third day when the director of the facility said that he was never going to let me out, I knew I was going to be there for a while. I didn't know how long, but I knew it wasn't going to go smoothly as planned.
Por eso me enfoqué en ayudar a la gente, no estaba en mi cabeza ya el yo sabía que se iba a tardar el que yo saliera libre, pero de todo el tiempo que fuera, 1 mes, 2 meses, 3 meses, 4 meses, 5 meses, los 7 meses que fueron, me pasé más entretenido en ayudando a otra gente, pensando en otra cosa, no tanto en que estaba ahí detenido por nada.
So that's what happened. I basically tried not to focus that I was detained. I tried to focus on how I can help these people and help more people, how I can help people from not being in the center. And that was my focus. That's what got me through everything. That's all I had to think about, is how to help other people to get through these moments.
Wow, that's incredible, man. I mean, I've known Angulo for quite some time, and he's always came across a very, very, very nice person. Being in there, and basically the world just stops for anybody that's incarcerated. So while he was in there, at any point, was his mind with the sport, or was his mind just about getting out to his family? I mean, did he feel that he was missing a big part of his moment of getting back on track since his loss? Was there an urgency of getting back in there and trying to redeem himself, or anything like that? You know, was that urge of getting back in the ring, was that ever there, or did it leave for a while being incarcerated? How was he able to separate that part of him?
Sabes, cuando alguien está detenido, siempre es como el tiempo para esa persona. Y sabemos que estaba separado de tu familia por mucho tiempo, pero no había un momento que pensabas del boxeo después de tu pérdida, que querías regresar y otra vez enseñar a tu carrera, comenzarlo otra vez, o sentías que estabas perdiendo tiempo en no poder continuar con tu carrera de boxeo. No había un momento que estabas pensando en boxeo o cómo vas a poder seguir con tu carrera.
Sí, muchas veces pensaba en los pleitos que hacían, como la mayor parte de la gente que trabajaba ahí de seguridad, me preguntaban a mí qué pensaba de esa pelea, que si quién iba a ganar. ¿Sabes? Siempre les daba yo las estadísticas de quién iba a ganar y nunca me equivoqué en ninguna pelea. Pero sí me daba como más ansiedad nada cuando suponía que era mi última corte en abril y que iba a alcanzar a salir para ver el pleito de Floyd, si no más me acuerdo, y que no pasó así. Otra vez me ilusioné de salir y estar en una función grande.
So yeah, there was many moments I was thinking about boxing, and I got frustrated because I was always having to explain what happened at that last fight. But we were also watching a lot of TV and the boxing fights, and everyone there would always ask me, who do you think is going to win? What are the statistics? And they wanted to learn about boxing, so I was constantly being reminded about boxing, and I would give them my opinions, I would help them out. And especially when my court process was happening, I believed many times that I'd be out soon, especially in April when that was supposed to be my last court, and then the judge postponed it. So I was very disappointed because I was going to miss the Mayweather fight at that time.
Wow. What is his thoughts about, you know, and obviously he doesn't have to answer this, you know, if he's still being watched and all that. But, you know, I mean, I'm a Mexican-American, and I've seen a lot of, Mexican people that come over, and they're looking for to change. They're looking for a future, you know. And so you come to the United States, you know. And I've seen a lot of good guys that get caught by the immigration, and they're here solely to work, but they're treated almost like criminals. And I've always wondered, how do they end up looking at our system of treating people that come over here for a better living? They're not doing anything that's going to harm the states. Like, there are some people that cross over from, not just from Mexico, but from all over, from, you know, from across the oceans, that travel over here to do just solely bad in the states. Has this changed his heart of how things are done here? Has it made him a little bit more doubtful, maybe even bitter? Does he still feel like he's walking on eggshells? Does he still feel like at any given moment when everything seems to be fine, there is a possibility they can just come up and pick him up again because of a rumor? Hello? I think so.
Damn it.
Okay, let me
breathe.
Let me breathe. And let me call her back. And let me And obviously, that was their cell phone. That
I hope their cell phone didn't die. I know they've been out. They were at the gym.
That's
Enjoy this Verizon ringback tone while your party
nope.
is reached.
She just texted me to call back.
Okay. Hello. I'm sorry. Okay, I guess we got disconnected here really quick.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Okay, so let me go back to my question. I was talking about, you know, being a Mexican American and seeing a lot of my family members and even people that I've worked with that come over to the States looking for a better life, and they get picked up, you know, and they basically just get their freedom taken away, and they're kind of treated like criminals. How does he look at now at our system of the way things work, you know, where he's a working class man. He's coming over here to better his life for himself and for his family. Has it changed his thought? Is he still feeling that he's on walking eggshells because at any given moment, if a rumor's dropped again, there's a possibility he can go back in? Is there anything like that of that effect for himself? Or he's still in good spirits with the States and has trust in the system and believing that this was the last and only time this was going to happen? Because I feel like a big chunk, 7 months of his career, of his prime, was basically just stolen from him.
Él es mexicano-americano y tiene mucha familia que viene aquí y entiende el deseo de venir aquí por la oportunidad. Mucha de la gente que viene aquí solo viene para trabajar, pero cuando les recogen por los servicios inmigratorios, les tratan como criminales muchas veces. Y él quiere saber tu percepción ahora. ¿Tú todavía crees en nuestro sistema? ¿Tú crees, tú tienes preocupación que otro día te pueden recoger si un rumor sale y va a regresar a ese lugar? Porque él piensa que fue un castigo para ti haber perdido siete meses de un tiempo muy importante para ti en tu carrera. ¿Qué son tus pensamientos?
Yo creo que toda la gente que trabaja en ahí solamente hace su trabajo. Conmigo, sinceramente, todos se portaron muy bien. Al contrario, les daba vergüenza de la forma en la que se estaba comportando el director de ese lugar, porque dice, no está representando a todo ICE. Está representando a sí mismo nada más, a él, sin ver que está haciendo quedar mal a todo Estados Unidos, porque estaba tomando una decisión propia en mi una opinión propia en mi caso, que eso es algo ridículo. Y yo creo que la gente ahí normalmente hace correctamente su trabajo. Desgraciadamente, a ellos les toca ir a recoger a la gente, a veces a las casas, pero es gente que no está siguiendo la ley, es gente que si ya perdió su proceso, desgraciadamente, pues no tiene que estar en el país o no puede estar en el país. Yo creo que mientras haga las cosas correctas o conforme marca la ley, aquí en Estados Unidos no van a tener ningún problema.
So he says basically all of the ICE officers treated him very well for the most part. They are just doing what their job is. That's what they're sent out to do. But at the facility, they all treated him kindly, and a lot of them were embarrassed constantly by the things that were going on with my case and the way this director was treating me. It wasn't the norm, and it didn't make ICE look good. And this director didn't realize his behavior represented all of ICE, our government, not just himself, but yet he was making his own personal opinion on how I should be treated. So I believe the other officers were disappointed because it made them all look bad as a whole. Usually ICE has to do their job. That's their job, to go out and get people, pick up people, but usually it's people who've broken the laws, people who lost their court cases. So those
right.
are the ones they go to their homes to pick up. It's not just random person that they go over to get. But I believe they're trying to do their job. On a side note, usually they go get people that are criminal and that have said that they were going to leave, or they lost their court case and they were going to leave voluntarily, but they never did.
Right.
On a side note.
for him, you know, Kelly O'Reilly, his immigration lawyer, mentioned that you guys were talking about doing a foundation and setting something up to go help people down in El Centro. Has that taken any more shape? Is it something that you guys can talk about, or should we just get to the boxing stuff?
Kelly O'Reilly dijo que va, ustedes van a hacer una fundación para ayudar a los inmigrantes. Es algo que ya han estado estableciendo todavía. Necesitan más tiempo para hacer eso y ya podemos hablar de boxeo.
Nomás estamos checando todas las leyes, todo eso como se hace. Yo ahorita sinceramente le dije que me diera pues todavía esta semana, porque esa semana se la he dedicado nada más a mi niña estas dos últimas semanas. El lunes o martes ya me siento con él para finalizar eso y en cuanto lo tengamos ya concreto, la fundación, la vamos a dar a conocer, el nombre y todo de la fundación.
Right now we're doing research, especially Kelly O'Reilly. We're figuring out how we're going to establish this. I asked him for 2 weeks to be with my daughter. I've just spent 1 week with her. I'm going to take another week. And starting Monday or Tuesday, we're going to sit down and really get to the gist of it. Once we do establish it completely, I will let you know.
Does he feel that, let me ask this, you know, with this whole experience and being taken away from his daughter and his family and from the sport that was giving him a good living and the sport that he loved, does he feel that this is a calling for him to do this extra thing by trying to help people that have been subjected to this incarceration? Does he feel that this cause is much bigger than the sport of boxing right now for himself, for him to reach out and create a foundation and help others?
¿Tú crees que tu trabajo ayuda a los inmigrantes por tu experiencia y todo lo que ha pasado? ¿Tú crees que eso es más grande que tu carrera en boxeo, a dedicarte a ayudarte a ellos y crear esta fundación? ¿O todavía piensas que tu carrera de boxeo es importante?
No, todavía mi carrera es importante. Es un paso grande, creo yo, para poder ayudar a esa gente. Si no me ayudo primero yo a mí mismo, no voy a poder ayudar a nadie. Así que tengo que ayudarme a mí mismo. Y conforme pase el tiempo, si Dios quiere, estamos empezando ahorita una fundación chiquita. Esperamos que con el tiempo no sea una fundación chiquita, sino sea una fundación muchísimo más grande para ayudar a toda, no más a la gente que está en el centro, sino a toda la gente que se encuentre en cualquier centro de detención en Estados Unidos.
So, boxing, my career is very important. It's a big step to want to create this foundation, but I can't help others if I can't help myself, and boxing is my career. I plan to dedicate myself to that, but at the same time, I can start a small foundation, and hopefully with this will grow to help others. And hopefully it'll grow large so we can help immigrants everywhere and those who are in any detention center anywhere in this country. That is hopefully the goal.
Do you think also, I mean, not just immigrants that need kind of further education about how to get good legal representation, but boxers, you know, it seems like Kelly O'Reilly said, had your paperwork been taken care of in the first place, you'd be a citizen right now. Do you think that, you know, do you kind of regret that, not being as educated and involved with your own paperwork as you should have been?
Boxeadores normalmente no se dedican al negocio y los papeles. Kelly O'Reilly ha dicho que esto nunca tenía que haber pasado porque si hubieran hecho todo correcto hace años, tú ya deberías ser ciudadano americano. Entonces, tú es algo que te arrepientes no tener más la educación o ser más involucrado en tus papeles y tus negocios para saber cómo tenías que manejar la situación.
Pues no me arrepiento porque ya pasó. Desgraciadamente no tuve una educación muy muy grande, solo terminé la primaria, pero gracias a Dios que he sabido llenarme de la gente que es buena y que tiene buenos deseos y que conoce las leyes aquí en Estados Unidos. Así que creo yo que por el tiempo de antes ya pasó, no, lo siento que voy a tener que pasar por todos esos problemas, la falta de educación, pero yo creo que me ha enseñado muchísimo todo esto para ser más grande, no lo más en mi carrera, sino como persona. ¿Por qué? Porque no nada más pensar en uno mismo, sino que hay que pensar en que hay muchísima gente que se encuentra, como te digo, en los centros de detención, que no tienen ni los recursos de quien los represente bien, y es muy, muy duro todo eso.
So I can't look at the past and have any more regrets. It's in the past. I'm trying to keep it there. I only had primary education, so yeah, I was kind of a loss. But I think now I have the right people around me, people who know the laws, and that was probably my flaws, not to have people who really were trustworthy or knew what they were doing to guide me. But I'm going to leave the regrets for the past and go forward. And I also realize now that, like me, there's a lot of people there who don't have the luck that I do now to have the right representation, and they're incarcerated there and not needing to be. And that's something I feel bad for, that they don't have the right representation or people to guide them.
Absolutely, you know. Let's talk about his weight. How is his weight conditioning? Obviously, he was probably not able. I mean, he wasn't able to do this routine that he was normally doing to prepare himself, you know, to when he would get into the ring. But how does he feel? Is he going to stay at 154? Is he moving up? What does he think right now at this moment of what division he will return to?
Tu peso, todos están preocupados por tu peso y quieren saber cómo todo el tiempo que has estado ahí, que si has mantenido tu peso o si quieres subir de categoría o si vas a seguir peleando en tu categoría de 154.
Pues creo que la gente que fue a la conferencia de prensa y la gente que miró las fotos se puede dar cuenta de que no engordé. Mucha gente se quedó sorprendida porque empezaban a ver a un Alfredo Angulo gordo, pero no, mi cuerpo es natural, gracias a Dios. Soy un yo creo que un 154 natural y si Dios quiere vamos a regresar en el mismo peso, pero el que más trabajo tiene en mantener mi peso de preparador físico, el problema es de él, no mío.
So everybody's been asking him that. They, especially at the press conference, a lot of people imagined that he was going to be fat. They all were surprised by the way he looked. They thought, they kept telling him he looked great because he wasn't fat and looked kind of fit. So naturally, this is his natural body weight, and he feels lucky for that, and he wants to continue at 154. He hopes, if God blesses, that's where the weight class he'll continue, but now the job at hand goes to his conditioning coach, and that's Daryl Hudson, and he will have the hard task of making sure that I'm at the right weight and that I can still pull off what I usually do in regards to my conditioning.
How long do you think he's going to take to assess that? You know, I know you guys go to the gym like next Monday. Actually, also, has he decided on a trainer? Have you begun that process, or does that begin next week also?
¿Cuánto tiempo crees que te va a demorar para saber si el tiempo que te va a tomar para estar preparado otra vez para pelear? Y si has escogido un entrenador, porque sé que el lunes vas a comenzar ahí al gimnasio con Daryl.
La semana voy a trabajar con Daryl nada más, y ahorita estamos trabajando en eso de buscar el entrenador. Hoy trabajamos con un entrenador.
He says, basically, that's the job at hand on Monday. I'm going to work a week really hard with my conditioning coach, and we will see where I'm at. And actually, today I did some work with a trainer that I'm thinking of, but I think after 1 week I will be able to really say where I'm at, and I can tell you, and we will be able to also choose a coach once I'm in a better shape.
Well, you know, I don't want to keep him any longer. He's been doing interviews. I know he needs to get back. I'm just happy to have you back on, man. I'm just happy that everything worked out for you, you know, the way that it did. Happy endings are so rare in boxing and in life, and I'm glad you're getting one.
Él dice que gracias porque no quiere tomar más de tu tiempo, pero es una alegría de verte así y quiere darte las gracias. Entonces, no, ya no te quiere fastidiar porque sabe que
no. No, al contrario, gracias a ustedes por tomarse el tiempo de esta entrevista. Lo agradezco mucho y especialmente a Gabriel. Montoya, le doy las gracias por todo el apoyo que me ha dado en estos tiempos tan difíciles para mí. Y a la gente de ICE, que siempre hizo su trabajo en contra del director, la verdad, porque mucha gente se puso en problemas por hacer su trabajo correctamente en contra del director de ese lugar.
Thank you guys for having me on here. It's a pleasure always to do interviews with you. And thank you so much, Gabriel, again, for supporting me all this time. I know it was hard work for you. And I also want to take a chance to thank all the ICE officers and employees who did their job right and were persecuted for helping me or just doing things correctly, treating me right, when going against their director.
Right. And it's, you know, I'm just kind of, I never really felt like I grew up with him. This job is really hard, and it's kind of thankless. And yes, you know, seeing him with his daughter and blowing out candles, and that's why we did it. And I'd do it again.
Dice que son momentos así como verte y verte libre y verte con tu hija soplando la torta y las velas. Esos momentos les hace el trabajo fruto.
Muchas gracias, al contrario. Y ahorita que está hablando de mi hija, que está afuera de sus telas yo para recogerla.
He says, thank you so much. And now talking about my daughter, I'm in front of her school and I need to go pick her up.
All right. Well, you do your thing, man. We'll see you soon.
Okay. Take care. I'll see you soon.
All right, Alfredo. All right, brother. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Lucy.
There you go, Alfredo Angulo with us here on Leaving the Ring Radio. I think you said it right, you know, that it's really rare we get a story of boxing that ends well. And I still just can't get how so positive he is with everything that's basically happened, you know, with him. You know, being incarcerated for no apparent reason, you know, and then people writing here and there that didn't contribute, they just kind of hurt him even more and kept him away from his family and away from the ring.
yeah.
It's sad that you see guys out there you know, we've always been ones that say that, you know what, you want to help out the sport, you want to do this, get out there, you know, cover the sport or et cetera, et cetera. But sometimes that translates into cover the sport, do your job, do it the right way, not just, you know, be a fan that runs off of rumors and, you know, it's all happy because you got a chance to speak to this person and didn't decide to do, you know, the whole job, the extra mile, the follow-ups, the behind the scenes, the facts. That's the word, the facts, following up on the facts. And you don't really understand the damage that you can do to somebody based on just going off whatever you feel that is necessary to throw out there because you're worried about hits and other things.
Yeah, it was crazy. If you go back and read that, the two-parter I did about him, when I was researching that, it was kind of amazing that when you Googled him, when I was doing like a media timeline, of how that, you know, of the Martinez negotiations, how it was spread, who wrote it, and who picked it up and then spread it and moved it. Yeah, it was very one-sided. No, there was not one that went and asked him what was going on. And quickly, that just became the story, you know, that Angulo was this prima donna and, you know, all this kind of went down. and it was very damaging for him. There's a lot more to it. There's still, I would say, you know, 25 pages of notes of leads and things left in my notebook from talking with him that you know, there's still a lot there. I don't even know, like he said, maybe just leave the past in the past. But it was just an amazing story. And I remember, I don't want to get negative because I'm just so happy for him, but I'm sitting there at the celebration, you know, and Golden Boy was, you know, I'll give it to him. They were gracious enough to allow me to come to that event. We didn't really talk. We kind of did at the end. I kind of regret the way it went. But I'm sitting there, and there's this whole room full of media. And all these people are videotaping. And Beto, over here, I couldn't even get near him.
Right.
You know, we kind of nodded at each other across the table. It was the first time I'd seen him as, you know, a free man in a long time. And I waited, and we did the interview in the car on the way home. But I'm like, you know, if half of these guys had half the interest that I did in the story, maybe it wouldn't have been 8 months. Maybe it would have been 4 months. Maybe, you know, he wouldn't have had to go through the detention center at all. But instead, everybody kind of like the last lines of his interview with me, you know, he said, like, I've got the right people around me, and I don't really have to fire anybody because my whole team, everybody that I trusted completely, they all left. So I don't have to fire anybody. You know, I just kind of, it's just interesting seeing people pat him on the back and, oh man, it's great. You know, I wish our media was more curious and didn't just take press releases or one person's word for it. I'm not calling anybody a liar in this particular case. What I'm saying is endeavor to find out more. I find it interesting. And this will be the last thing. I'll get off my soapbox so that we used to do the segment called the soapbox if you wanted to. Two stories that I researched for over 2 years, and they come to roost this year. If you pay attention, I don't even really follow baseball. I follow drugs. All the testosterone stuff that's going on over in baseball, it's going to be bigger than Balco. And in this case, it really is, it's kind of like, I don't know, it kind of feels good. It's like your two pet bands like just made it big.
Right.
But I agree with you, Dave. We need to ask more questions. We need to back up the fighters on a way other than saying, oh, you're really good. But, you know, when they need us most, you know, we should be there. You know, the WSB fighters, I wish more writers would pick that story up because there's like, I don't know, a few hundred of those guys or over 100 of those guys. I can't tell all those stories myself. And it's an important story. Those, you know, there's this poor kid. I heard another one. Eric Fowler is out in Texas. Good fighter, could be developed into a good lightweight. He's 5-3. Nobody touches him. You know, there's so much good to do in this sport and so much apathy. It kind of sucks.
Yep, I agree. You know, and I'm reading a couple of things that people are tweeting out to us about the Alfredo Angulo interview, and people hitting me up on Facebook as well. You can call in if you want to. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. You can call 347-215-7598. Speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Got to get past the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Let's talk some boxing, 3 hours of boxing talk. If you missed the Alfredo Angulo and Perro interview, you could definitely catch it in the archive. You know, we have some pretty good news. We're going to be joining the family, the Billy C. Boxing Talk family. We're going to end up releasing a press release, a little bit more details, exactly what we mean by emerging and joining the Billy C. family. We have some things that are in the works that I think that's going to benefit the boxing fans, the listeners, and the people that follow us for quite some time, and the people that love the sport of boxing. Hey, we're going to be in Solo Books. We're going to be at the Solo Books sale event in Fairfield, California, myself and Mr. Gabriel Montoya, a.k.a. the Dark Cloud. We're going to be down over there. We're doing something for the very first time. I don't think anybody's done this before, but we're going to be airing live Ustream, not Blog Talk, Ustream only. They're at the event, and what we're going to be doing is speaking to the fighters before they get in the ring. We're going to be able to speak to some of the fighters and trainers, and might possibly have a special guest join us. Not sure yet. They're at the Solo Book Sale event by Paco Entertainment and Don Chargan and Golden Boy, but we're going to be breaking down that fight card happening before it goes live at 6 p.m., And we'll be there going live at 4 p.m., myself and the Dark Cloud. So, Fairfield, be prepared for some rough rain going your way.
You know, I'm just kind of still lost in the – just that he had to end the interview to pick up his daughter.
Yeah.
That was the whole point. It was the whole point of getting him out so he could go and be with his daughter. And it's just – you know, I gotta tell you, it chokes me up, Dave. You know, this whole week, that's really all I've kind of thought about, really since he got out last week. It's just like, you know, like sometimes you can do something. And like, I'm not saying, you know, my work got him freed. I mean, it was such a collective effort. It was cool to meet Kelly Riley at this thing, guy I talked to on the phone for over a year. You know, Mike Miller, who I know, and Lucy. This, all of us kind of like looking at each other. Daryl Hudson, Damon Bingham was there. You know, Scott Hale from Hale Sports. He wasn't there, but I mean, in spirit. He was the guy that kind of pulled me into the whole fold. It's just kind of cool to like look at each other and like, we got this dude out. We all like worked in our own, did our own little thing, and he's just sitting there with his daughter, like, and they're just smiling, and you know, she's all like got frosting all over her face from, she keeps eating all the frosting on the cake. You know, it's this black and white cake, so she has like these black lips. It's hilarious, you know.
Right.
And just seeing them together, she kind of looks like him. It's just, dude, it's like, you know, I can't complain about my job, like, for at least a month, you know?
Exactly.
you know, one thing we didn't get to talk about that I really want to get to is Lamont Peterson and the IBF, that they allowed him to – and I don't know if you touched on this in the monologue as I was running from the cops to
– No, I haven't. I haven't touched on that, and I also want to touch on the you know, Andre Berto situation. And but go ahead. Let's start off with the, you know, I mean, Andre Berto being licensed by the California State Athletic Commission. But go with the Lamont Peterson, and I'll follow right behind.
You know, I just this is nothing against the fighter. You know, I've talked to that camp the whole time. I wanted to separate. You know, it's not personal. This is business. The man admitted to having a banned substance in his system for a fight, for a championship mm-hmm. fight, in which he won those belts by, you know, I'm not saying, you know, the drugs made him able to do that, because, you know, nobody's ever made a steroid that makes you a better skilled at something. But he didn't have to tell us. I do get that. He didn't spike on any test after that fight or before that fight. So, you know, he was on the honor system, and I appreciate that. It doesn't change the fact that he was on a banned substance for a world title fight without medical permission. You can't do the retroactive TUI. I don't really believe in it. I know he's had a lot of time off, and I guess that's kind of time served, but there should be some sort of suspension. I don't think they should have allowed him to keep his belt. I really don't. And that may be unpopular to say, but I just think it opens a Pandora's box. It's such a bad precedent. I don't understand. Like, if there's a time to get kind of outraged and not just throw your hands up and go, oh, that's boxing. Damn these, you know, corrupt sanctioning bodies. This is the time to kind of take a step forward and say, no, this isn't going to work for me. And really hammer the IBF, you know, and really take exception with it. I don't know if we boycott it. I don't know what we really can do, but it just seems outrageous to me. How do you feel?
I agree with you. You know, I think that I honestly think, you know, this is something that it just kind of tells you more or less how the alphabet soups they think, how they like to kind of just make their own rules and their own laws. I mean, like you said, Lamont did come forward and I think he kind of accepted. He accepted responsibility first off by allowing VADA testing to step in and do their job. And even with like Andre Berto's situation, you know, I applaud these gentlemen because they did something that nobody was willing or brave enough to go, hey, look, let's clean up the sport. Let's be part of that movement. Let's follow through. But is that good enough to go and turn the cheek and say, well, there was some foreign substance. There was some banned substance. With Berto's situation, both men's situations were a little bit different, but we have to follow these protocols. And these protocols, we can't, to me, in my opinion, these are rules that shouldn't be bent. These are rules that should be followed, not just by one organization, not just by one outfit, but by all outfits. I think that's the only way we can correct and fix things in the boxing world. You know, doing half-ass stuff only gives us half-ass results. That's my opinion.
Yeah, California, it's interesting that they went and licensed him in California, Berto, because it's a commission in flux right now, you know. I believe Che Guevara is running things, is kind of the de facto head right now, that after George Dodd resigned. And I never thought I'd say it, but I kind of miss George in this situation because I actually don't think he would have licensed him. But I don't expect Che Guevara to – I could go on about him for a while, but I don't expect him to be making anybody in that position. It's a political position. He's probably, you know, jumping to actually get the job of executive director, just being the last man standing. I'd love to see somebody like Dean Lojas or be brought back or Pat Russell be put in charge. There's other people that could do that job better than him, I think, and with much more backbone. I won't attack his integrity, but I'm not looking at his matches. I'm not crazy about his backbone. And looking at this license situation, I think, you know, he could be swayed, or then that board could be influenced. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me that they would just, you know, regardless of contamination and all that, you know, and I'm not sure if they actually made a case for contamination. I had heard through the grapevine what his story was going to be about a month and a half ago, but I never actually confirmed that that's what it was going to be because they never released anything to the press.
Right.
So I don't know how he was able to do that, but it's regardless, you had a banned substance in your system, and a couple months later, now you have a license to fight in that state. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So I don't expect anybody jockeying for the executive director position to make a strong decision like, no, Andre Berto, I'm not going to give you a boxing license, even though you could bring HBO or Showtime to this state. I don't expect that to happen. And all that. But, you know, I was sitting down with the guys, with Gennady Golovkin's team and with K2 and somebody, there was somebody there from USA Boxing, and we were discussing it today. And one of the problems one of the things that was brought up, he's like, the guy dodged the question and said, you know, I don't know if we need a federal commission, but I know one thing we need, which is a uniformity in rules, particularly with medical rules of, you know, you have to take different tests in each state. Each state has different standards for who further licensing. And a lot of it is just so they can collect a licensing fee in each state. It would actually kind of cripple them financially a little bit, each commission, if there was just like, you know, you could register with the ABC and you took one test, you were licensed, and it went across the board. And so that everybody's kind of got their hand out and everybody's got their own self-interest here. And that's kind of the problem with boxing. It's probably why it'll never change, because it's so Wild West and you can go one place and get one type of justice or another place and get another type of justice. So I fully expect to see Lamont licensed. I doubt it'll be in Nevada. I think it'll be in Texas. It's just a hunch.
We will find out, you know.
New York would be a dark horse as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be very, very much and stuff. Hey, we're going to be in Riverside, I believe. What was that date I sent you there, Gabe?
No. I've got it.
It's going to be in September. I'll let you know right now.
Yeah. Damn you, iPhone. I'm telling you, this day has been a little strange with the old iPhone. I'll pull it up right now. It's Saturday on the 8th.
On the 8th, we're going to be with Josecito Lopez and the whole crew, everybody that trains out of the Feather Gym in Riverside, California, under the tutelage of Henry Ramirez. We're going to be there live. We're going to be doing our Ustream show there live. So keep that. Save the date on Saturday. It's going to be early in the morning. I think we're going to be broadcasting around 11 a.m. And we're going to have a chance to check out the pros there, train, get prepared for their upcoming fight. Josecito We'll be training on that day. But then at the same time, he'll be sitting down with us, with his head trainer, the man behind the scene, Mr. Henry Ramirez, and get a little bit more in-depth of what is the strategy of facing Saul Canelo Alvarez, who's going to be fighting September 15th in Las Vegas. So be sure to write that down. Save the date, September 8th, Saturday, I believe at 11 a.m. If the time does change, 11 a.m., we will let you guys know. But right now, as we know it, that's the date. So save that date. And then for this Saturday, Solo Book Sale, we're going to be airing 2 hours before they go live. We'll be live, and we'll have a chance to break down that fight card and speak to some of the fighters that are going to be on that fight card. Alan Sanchez, who's from the Bay, you know, who had his win and stopped, you know, Arminio Reyes, which was a rematch. Their first match was really entertaining. You know, they really were throwing some leather in that fight. But in the rematch, you know, Reyes' father had passed away, Big Papa. And, you know, a lot of us felt that his mind wasn't there. Sanchez, you know, did his job, very tall for his division, strong kid. We're going to see a little bit more. We're going to see exactly where he stands at and get a chance to speak to him. And maybe even talk a little bit about that Reyes fight, get a little bit more in-depth with him about that last fight they had, and what is going on from there. Reyes is keeping himself busy with the Thompson fight cards at the Doubletree. So we know he's trying to rebuild back his credibility. I've always liked that. I've always liked Reyes, been a big fan of Reyes. You know, but Alan Sanchez, I can't say I'm creeping up to be a fan of him. I've been keeping an eye on him, and I got to tell you, I do like what I'm seeing from Sanchez.
Yeah, I do too. You know, I wanted to finish up a little bit of housekeeping on the Berto thing. In Dan Raphael's article, quote unquote article, he writes something that's erroneous, and because he's the worldwide leader, and like millions and millions and millions of people read his stuff or have access to it on ESPN, I feel like I should correct it because he writes. In preparing for the rematch with Ortiz, Berto had Victor Conte, mastermind of the notorious Bay Area Lab, you know, Balco, steroid scandal, in his training camp for this fight. That's actually not true. He wasn't in his camp. Never was. That was for the first camp. He stopped by one day, and then Berto got injured. Then Berto moved to Winter Haven, Connecticut, near his – or Winter Haven, Florida, rather, for his training camp. And they never showed up there. I was actually not involved in the training camp. So thanks, Dan, for fact-checking. I think Sanchez is coming along. I'm actually pulling up the fight schedule so we can kind of segue into that. I think, Dave, that I've been talking to you while on my computer too much, and now my computer's acting up. I'm getting your computer karma. It's just pissing me off. Reyes, you know, I really do. You remember we had him on the show right before that fight, after his father passed. And doing media, much less heading into a major fight, and really coming off of a big win with, over Molina, you're expecting like a little bit of an emotional letdown, and then you put him in with a guy that he's already beaten, and maybe his guard was down a little bit. You're like, oh, I'll do it again. I don't know, you know, but. Looking at that first round, he kind of just got caught cold and never really recovered. I expect him to kind of bounce back and really just get himself back in winning ways. His style is not one that, you know, oh my God, you know, he lost. I expected him to be undefeated his whole career. He's going to be a grinder, you know. He's already had a loss in his career before anyways. He's already come back against, back in June, kind of bounced back off of that. So, I expect him to kind of roll over John David Charles. He's 7-5, and just kind of. I think what they're doing is just getting momentum, getting him fights, and then kind of being ready for that next big opportunity. I think Artemio will be back.
I think so too. You know, this is something that I mean. First off, we got to applaud him too with the interviews when he was doing media interviews, and when he came on to Leaving the Ring. You said it, you know, his father had just passed away. Here's a guy that understands that media is the lifeline to a career, where there's other fighters out there that, you know, 3 weeks or a week before their fight, they don't want to do any interviews, you know, and there's nothing going on in their camp, you know. They just don't want to have that, that connection. Even after, when they're out of a fight, when they're not training, they don't want that connection. So I like fighters that understand that you need that exposure, regardless, you know, big or small. You need that exposure to be reached out, and that you can get. Just always stay in the minds of the fight fans. So I honestly believe with with Reyes is that he was keeping his name in the minds of fight fans, but at the same time, I have to really admit, I think the kid was struggling with the passing. Who couldn't? You know what I mean? Who wouldn't struggle with that? You know, your father just passed away, and you're used to turning and looking at that person in your corner that he's no longer going to be there. That to me, that's a big blow, man. That's a big part of your arsenal just taken away from you without warning.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, like the Buster Douglas situation. I remember it was, 3 weeks or so out from the fight. It kind of like emboldened him. It you know, crushed him at first, and then it turned into fuel. You know, this is how I'm going to get through it. I'm going to train my ass off and beat the shit out of Mike Tyson. In this case, it was like the week of, you know. I never like to really second-guess people, but it did seem too good to be true that he was so okay, you know. At the time, and no excuses or whatever, but it that's what it seemed like to me.
Absolutely.
There's also the other thing we probably should get to is what's going on with James Kirkland.
I know, man. I mean, he's just kind of lost it. I mean, you know, when he came on Leaving Ring, he was signed on to fight Saul Canelo Alvarez. I mean, he sounded like a kid that just hit the pañata with one big hit. The candies all fell out, and he collected them all, didn't share with anybody. You know what I mean? That's the impression I got. And then the next day, he's out. You know, his advisory people told him no. And then the guy just went out of left field with everything else. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we talked about this off the air, and I told you, I haven't been shy about it. I've said it. Kirkland to me just seems like a guy that doesn't have his head where it should be at, and that's in the sport. You know, I mean, when you got a guy that is training to lose weight 2 weeks or maybe a week out of the fight before getting in the ring, that just tells me that he's just not too serious about his career. You know, he's really depending on what he attributes in the ring because of his strength and power. He's not really thinking about what the guy's training to do to prevent him from winning. And that spells out disaster for me. I don't know. I'll let you throw in some thoughts about Kirkland right now. I'm just really disappointed in the guy. He needs to straighten out his act big time.
Well, there's a lot of problems here. You know, and I wrote that piece this week, and there's still more there. It's just kind of, sometimes you just want to let the courts deal with it. And there's two problems here. I mean, one, he's firing his old team. He's firing Golden Boy, and he's suing to get out of his contract, which he feels they're in breach of anyways, and that it's an illegal contract. And I'm actually very curious to see, you know, if that's true. You know, sitting on the outside, and I talked to James for a good hour or so the other day, before my article. It was interesting when I came back around. Like, we agreed. I was like, all right, we're going to talk off the record for like an hour or so, and then for however long. And then at the end of it, if you want to go on record, then we'll go on record. You know, and I kind of did that with everybody. And then when it came time to, all right, I need to go to print, I went back around and got everybody's statements. I'd done all my other research. And James was the only one that didn't get back to me. And I found that unusual but kind of telling.
Right.
And so I was kind of left
Okay, now we're back. I swear, dude, I'm so sick of Blog Talk. I can't wait for us to leave this Blog Talk system here. Hopefully we can get this situation done with, and that's why one of the reasons why we are leaving. I'm not sure yet entirely the details of what we're doing with Blog Talk, but we'll get into those details as soon as we find out more with the Billy C Talking Boxing. He's syndicated. He's a radio show that airs every day, Monday through Friday. I think he does like a 2-hour gig, and we're going to be joining part of that family there, so that, you know, we can we're just taking it a step higher, and we've always
a step more stable,
you know, and really brand our name, and you know, we've been wanting to leave the Blog Talk world for quite some time, you know, because it also seems to, because everybody and their mother seems to have a Blog Talk boxing radio show now. You know, it's
I mean, that's cool, you know. I mean,
it is, you know. I'm like, cool, man, because that's, you know, we encouraged it, you know, like, hey, you know, try it out, you know, do your thing and stuff, you know. But it for us, we've been on for so long. I just feel we've kind of outgrown the Blog Talk, and especially with these problems, I'm just kind of done with it. But and I want us to venture off into something different, you know. So we're going to try the Billy C thing, see how that goes, but won't know completely yet all the details of where we're going next until a little later. But let's get back to that thought about Kirtland here. Go for it.
Yeah, so when I kind of dialed in, you know, to do the story and write it, I didn't get a hold of him, and he didn't. You know, it was me. It's me. You've got my number. You locked it in. I always identify myself anyways when I text a fighter. So why not get back to me? And then never mention anything. Everybody else read the story, and they seemed happy with it. It's, you know, this is the thing when you cover somebody for a very long time. As obviously, I've crossed a little bit of a line with Angulo. You know, I actually care about the man as a person. You know, what happens to him, and maybe if I'm not being objective, I don't know. I don't really care.
Right.
And Kirkland, it's a little bit like that too. I've covered him so long. It was not an easy article to write because you just, it's weird. It's like you pile up all the things that's going on. Pops Billingsley taking care of James Kirkland since he was 6 years old. You know, he was in an abandoned house. Bad situation, no father, kind of the mom not really taking care of him, and takes the guy in. You know, by nine, he's boxing for like $5 a round, doing sparring, and on his way to, you know, an amateur career. Had a stellar amateur career. Ann Wolf comes in around age 14, really gets things going, and they have the career that they do. But along the way, it's like, okay, 11-0, he's got a promotional career, but he's not getting the fights he wants to get, or moving along the way he wants to. Arm robbery, disappears for almost like 3 years. They rebuild him, you know, with Gary Shaw. And then, you know, I think he never, you know, the Julio fight and the Angulo fight are the two fights they've had great camps. But he goes all that way, you know, he signs with Golden Boy, moves from Shaw to Golden Boy. They kind of did all the right things with him, moved him into position, wanted him to be their beast that would just be like Tyson-esque. And what happens? Weapons charge. You're on probation. You know, and you're a felon, boom, he loses almost 2 years.
Right.
You know, the common denominator is you look through it all, you know, he kind of seems to be like the gist I got was he's asserting his power, like, I'm the one in charge here, you know, I'm not crazy about my contract, I want more money, I want to be treated like the star that I want to be or that I deserve to be. But then you look at the behavior and the common denominator and all the trouble that surrounded him and everything that gets in the way of James Kirkland is James Kirkland.
Right.
I find it hard to believe that Pops Billingsley is taking advantage of James. You know, this is a guy that I think recently just bought a bed, you know, like not a rich person.
Right.
And he's had the same van for like 18 years and he picks up all the kids and takes them, you know, from the various places, and on Sunday they all go to church. That's kind of the deal. You train with me, you come with me, with, you know, to church on Sunday. I don't. Ann Wolf does not strike me as a person that's ripping James off. You know, people can say what they want about Duncan and Mike Miller, but Mike Miller kind of just showed me his character by the way he treated Alfredo Angulo.
Right.
And he's always been at James's side, whether he's in prison or after the Ishida loss, all that. He's always been there. I don't. I don't see it, and I'm not James, and I'm not being treated the way he feels he is, so it's hard for me to say.
Yeah, it's really hard to say to kind of know what's really going on because we're not living in that household. We don't really know. We have to kind of pick and choose and try to put, you know, outline the facts that we think are real and make sense. That's the bottom line, is what makes sense, you know? You get a sense that you got to look at the pattern. And the pattern to me of what James Kirtland, how he kind of lives his life and his law of his life, it kind of speaks volumes of what he's about sometimes, you know? He's a guy that enjoys turmoil. He's up and down, not just in his career, but in his life, not stabled. His actions of coming in, fighting weight when he knows he's got to fight, his actions of pulling out of a fight after sounding like a kid that just won the lotto, and then later going, no, forget it. You know, that to me kind of leads to me to a guy that doesn't want to take responsibility, doesn't want to look into that mirror and face the music. And it's kind of sad, you know, because fighters to me are one of the most honest people in the world, you know, because they're the guys that they can say whatever they want, but once they get into that ring, they have to prove their greatness. They got to prove that their worthiness to the fans out there. Outside of that ring, they're just like an everyday person. They could be loyal, disloyal. They could be good people or bad people. Those are the ins and outs of the sport and of life. Right now, I'm not saying that Kirtland's a bad guy. I'm not saying none of that. But what I'm saying is, if we have to look at all the dots before we connect them, before we start pointing fingers at who's really in fault of the situation, I've said this before, even knowing about all these, you know, suing Golden Boy and everything else, I've said it many times before that. Clean up your act. You need to clean up your act. It's the bottom line. Anyways, if you want to call in, you certainly can.
I would agree. I'm sorry, I was on mute. I'm all agreeing with you to myself. Yes, Dave, you're right. It's true, though. I think it's just like the through line. You look at the Angulo's story. You look at Kirkland's story, and this WSB thing I've been working on. I'm finding out some of the fighters were kind of warned, like, don't do this thing. It's gonna you know, blow up. It's not gonna be good, and they do it anyways, and then they end up screwed, and they're like, ah. You know, it's to really, you know, and Peterson and Berto, you know what's going in your body, know what's in your contract, know where your money's going and how the whole system works, so you're not ending up one of those guys that owes a million in taxes after a lucrative career and then, or a so-so career. You know, you end up owing more than you ever made. People need to, like, get more educated, and I think that's something that's missing with a federal commission. Like, you know, when you have a company like WADA, and I think even USADA does this, certainly WADA has programs where they educate the fighters about the different drugs, or they look at the different substances that they take and give opinions on them. Like, WADA just partnered up with somebody. I'm going to pull up the information. In order to kind of have this, it's like a counseling. It's a group called the Drug Resource Center. It's regarding performance-enhancing drug resources, dietary supplement resources, and banned drug resources. They're called the DFS, and they're dedicated to clean sport, and they're widely respected in education programs. They're basically just there for the athlete to get smarter. And I think if we did have, like, say, a national commission, these guys would have more access to people that – like financial, advisors, people that would explain to them, like Alfonso Gomez talked about. You know, he blew a bunch of money before he realized how to save his money and make his money work for him. That shouldn't happen. You know, guys shouldn't go broke. Evander Holyfield, like, you know, selling all his stuff. You know, that shouldn't happen. And it's lack of education. And it's maybe it's not our responsibility to make sure that they keep their millions, but on some level, it kind of is. I mean, these guys are going in there and taking punches, and they're probably going to be a little foggier for it, at the very least. The least we could do is set up a system where they don't end up, like, hurting themselves, you know? across the board. And I think this education across the board is something that's just needed. Have we even talked about the Olympics?
You know, we touched a little bit on it, and we haven't.
Speaking of lack of education.
No, well, we didn't do a show last week, and I did want to talk about the Olympics and, you know, talk about Teddy Atlas being removed from the from the stands of being on the ringside, you know, how there was complaining that they were just too loud, him and Papa, and
he just keeps repeating himself. He's not that loud. It's just he kept saying the same shit over and over again. It was getting annoying.
Right, right. So, you know, I wanted to touch on that, and I know you got some more information about the Olympics. So let's go in on that. Let's talk a little bit about boxing Olympics here in the States over there in London for 2012. It wasn't our best, but we did. I still, you know what? Even though we didn't bring any medals, I think we did gain some potential new stars for the sport.
I agree with you. You know, I think all the commentators around them, if they didn't speak English, they all are fluent in how to say, you're either all the way in or all the way out. You know, National Commission. Like, you know, just all his little catchphrases. They speak Teddy now.
Right.
I agree with you, dude. You know, and I sat with somebody from USA Boxing today, and we were talking about the Olympic team, and we all agreed that they all have pro potential, and it's kind of the problem. It's a problem, yet it's not a problem, because there was also Abel Sanchez was sitting there, the trainer for Gennady Golovkin, and what the USA Boxing guys surmised, and we all agreed with, was that we simply don't have the money to send our guys over and be in those international competitions. Now the fighters over there fight all the time. You know, every other week they're fighting in some major tournament against top level guys. And they're also very used to – so they're used to that computerized system that's used in the Olympics. Now, they're not going to use that anymore. They're actually going to get rid of headgear and – starting, I think, in January, headgear, and they're going to go to pro-style fighting, you know, 10-8 must system. So that should be interesting to see all these guys, how they deal with fighting on an amateur schedule. You know, maybe defense is going to get better. But certainly guys are going to start fighting more pro-style. And things might swing the other way for us because all our guys, we fight like pros. But I asked Abel, I said, you know, okay, let's get our guys over there and get more experience and get them used to the computerized system. But for you as a pro trainer, what would you rather have? Some guy that knows how to play like that fencing game? So he basically like a human video game that just knows how to point but not punch through a target? Or a dude that knows how to fight the pro style that maybe didn't win a gold medal? And he's like, I'll take that guy, you know?
Right.
I don't have to undo any bad habits. It's fine, you know? And maybe it doesn't mean as much. I think we all kind of agreed on that too, to be, you know, I guess being an Olympian is an elite status, even if you don't win something, but even being a gold medal anymore isn't really the same fame that it used to be. Maybe it'll return as you can see a guy. It's one of the main reasons they're doing this. You can't like get into a guy and root for him if you can't see his face.
Well, this is the thing too that I was looking at. I mean, let's talk about the change of time here. At one time, the gold medalists were men, and when they won a gold, we put them up on the billboards. We put them in commercials. We endorsed them. Things are changing here. There was more, in my opinion, there was more publicity. There was more buzz about the females getting their shot and chance for the very first time historically at the Olympic Games, and we got a gold medalist by Clarissa Shields. And we're seeing the response of that. I'm getting the feeling that the trend is going to be the females are going to have the upper hand in the Olympics and the exposure in the Olympics than the men, where the women are not getting the same just due in the pro rankings. So there's a balance there, in my opinion. Do I want to stop seeing young men go overseas and prove that they're the best? I'm getting texts like crazy by everybody, you know.
Does it matter? I want to keep Olympic boxing. I don't want to lose it.
I don't either. I think that this is an experience. Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I'm sorry, man. I'm getting distracted because I'm getting sent texts and stuff.
Well, let me say this: the Rams didn't win for a long time,
right?
And they suck with potential right now. That doesn't mean I'm not going to watch the Rams,
right?
I think America is being a little bit of a bitch. I got to be honest. You know, oh, we didn't get any medals. This is the worst team ever. You know, let's just get rid of the whole thing. Just come on, guys. Just because you didn't win.
You know, cry wolf, and then when it happens, guess what? You'll be the first to go, we want it back. Give it back to us. This is not fair. So that's why I say don't knock the opportunities that these young guys go in there and they're getting the exposure. This is not to say that there could be some changes. There's not, you know, that there might not be a change into the sport leading on that these guys may get a chance of getting gold. Andre Ward is a perfect example. Won gold. Guess what? Not many folks were running to his door. This guy's still going to pro and still at this day is proving that he's one of the best. That he deserves to be a star. He's not even a star yet, and he's got a gold medal. So he can attest that, hey, even though you win the game, doesn't necessarily mean you get the treasure box. You still got to go hunt for it.
Well, even the idea that he was like, you know, that people can't really get into a fighter if they can't see his face. And I'm thinking, what about football? You know, like I can't really see Peyton Manning's face most of the game, or Kurt Warner. You know, I'd still worship Kurt Warner like a god. You know, I think if you market the whole thing, I mean, I think it comes down to it, and this is what the USA boxing guy was saying, was we don't have any money. And it was funny. He said over there at the Olympics, the other countries think that we were being arrogant because we refused to participate in international competitions. And our coaches were too embarrassed to say, it's not that we don't want to, it's our country can't afford to. You know, and it's just kind of sad, you know. It's like, no, dude, we'd love to come over and compete and get that kind of experience. And some of these guys got it in the WSB, you know, they ended up getting screwed on the back end. And you know, I feel remiss. I've had two articles, the Kirkland thing kind of happened and I had to write that. And then the Angulo story again this week. But I've got another WSB story coming and I actually do have documentation. I've seen the agreement. It was between USA Boxing, the ABC, Association of Boxing Commissions, and WBC or / AIBA officials. They did have a deal proposed and a counter proposal was there. And I've got the emails kind of saying, no, this is ridiculous. We're not going to do this. And then I've also got a bunch of kids. So basically the officials knew that it would count on their pro records. They did not have an agreement before going forth. They went forth anyways. And I've got a bunch of kids that say, hey, I was told differently. Maybe not in their contracts, but verbally they were told. They all say the same thing. They told me it wasn't going to count on my pro record. So I'm going to hammer it again, and it'll be another more in-depth, kind of more with documentation to back it up, see if that's strong enough for other writers to kind of see and pick it up. You know, I'm not being a dick about it, saying, hey, don't rip me off. I'm saying, rip me off, please. Like, pick up this story and run with it too, because these kids need, at the very least, a lot of people to say, hey, these are WSB fights. You know, these six losses could have been, if you followed it, dude. If you went to somebody else's country, you pretty much lost, you know, unless you knocked the other guy out. It was just kind of the way it was. It was corrupt all the way across the board, in my opinion.
I'm being texted, and you know, they asked not to be, you know, revealed or whatever the case is and stuff. So this is anonymous. USA Boxing, you know, speaking about fighters and about not receiving registration or fees, they have been sent, and fighters do have their books. They paid their fees locally, and they were never sent to Colorado. You know, their money was taken, but they were never sent out to Colorado.
What are they talking about?
We're going back. I was, you know, what you were touching on about the USA Boxing. So I was just going back to that just really quick and stuff. You know, because I'm getting a bunch of texts from a bunch of people and about the Olympics, what we were talking about. One of them was about the fees and registration, about being sent to Colorado, how the USA Boxing kind of made it, you know, denied that there was no bookings on that. And there was, you know, there was corruption there at some point, you know, and that's kind of something that needs to be resolved, you know.
Yeah, the whole thing, I mean, you know, the whole thing is just it needs to be torn apart and rebuilt.
Right.
You know?
I mean, this is not a facelift. You know, this is not a minor surgery. This is a
no.
This is something that needs to be dissected and moved.
Like this is like, it's not even like, okay, I need to replace the lungs, the heart, and the liver. You know, like, geez, just that, you know, is that all? Well, maybe the brain too, you know. I think you need, like, just a complete overhaul. Just rip the whole thing out.
Rip the whole thing out. You know what? Just remove the head. Just take the head.
Let's just keep the name, USA Boxing, you know, and then build from there. I mean, I think there's plenty of capable coaches. I think it's kind of a position. Head of USA Boxing, the Olympic team, should be a position that every trainer in the world would want to have and invest the next 4 years in, developing the next team
right.
and getting them ready. But they need the tools. They need to be able to take these guys, you know. Well, now, even more so, because everybody's going to have to get used to doing it our way. We have been fighting the 10-point must in our minds, not really the computerized version. Now that we'll be able to body punch and do all those kinds of things and there'll be no headgear. It is going to be very interesting. Boxing is going to have probably a slow facelift over the next 4 years as we head to the next Olympics, and this new system kind of develops with this next kind of graduating class into the pros, you know, this Olympic graduating class.
Right.
It's going to be a trip. I mean, can you imagine, like, Gennady Golovkin had, he's 350 amateur wins, 5 losses, which is an unbelievable record. But can you imagine a guy without headgear fighting 350 times? That's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
You know, no. Regandia has got like 347 or something like that. He's got a ton, like, you know, over 300 amateur fights. So it's going to be weird. Like, people are going to be better pro fighters in a sense. Defense is probably going to go up like the old times when they didn't have headgear or they didn't spar with headgear. But you better move your head because you don't want to get cut because you got to fight often. We'll see, like, better pro skills kind of be honed and slowly does get rid of this kind of fencing and guys that just look like they're good on the mitts but not good on a heavy bag or certainly not good at punching through a target. It's going to be an interesting time. Boxing is ever-changing, you know, and ever-growing. Maybe this will be a positive.
I hope it's going to be a positive. We need more positives in this sport. Speaking about positive, you know, it's always good and then it's always fun to see siblings get in the ring and follow the footsteps of the older brother. Ryan Caballero, who his brother has been, you know, we've been following his older brother for quite some time. And that would be, you know, who? Randy Caballero.
Oh, yeah. Little Randy.
Randy and his brother Romel is also, I believe, all three guys are going to be fighting on the same card, and this is being Ryan Caballero's pro debut. So we want to wish him all the luck in the world for Ryan Caballero. You know, I've heard that all the brothers are very talented. It's almost like the Benavides brothers. You know, the very talented kids, and it to me it just kind of lets you sit there and go, okay. Here's the juggle. Who's going to outdo? Because to me, when you know, it's just like if you have an older brother. You got an older brother. I got an older brother. Competition is a lot thicker than the outside world. You know what I mean? The outside of your home. The competition in the home is a lot more intense. You know, you always want to outdo the siblings. So this is going to be interesting. It's going to be fun to see Ryan Caballero, who's only 18 years old. He's the father of Marcos Caballero. And, you talk about, man, I mean, these guys are putting in some work. You know, he's a silver gloves in 2004 in the Junior Olympics, and he's a ringside world champion in 2005. And he's also won the Desert Showdown in 2006. So it's fun. This is going to be exciting. I can't wait to see his younger brother get in there and see what he can produce. You know, we had a chance to check out David Benavides when he got in with Kelly Pavlik. So we know that this kid, big kid, he's definitely a prodigy that we have to keep an eye out, a prospect worth looking for. So Ryan Caballero, haven't had a chance to see him, don't know what he brings, but his brother is definitely a working project of becoming a champion in the game. And so you got to know he's definitely, hopefully, because it's never always true that the guy's going to end up getting some of the seed that the older brother has, or a younger brother, like in Oscar De La Hoya's case. His brother Joel was a fighter first, but Oscar was obviously the guy that made it on top, not the older brother. Same thing with Robert the Ghost Guerrero. Ruben Guerrero Jr. was a fighter first, but the younger brother got further in his career. So this is going to be interesting.
You know, I'm sitting here checking out Twitter, letting myself get distracted too. Yeah, it is. I'm kind of excited. Like, always a fighting family is cool, and two brothers, because you want to see if they can do what you know, other brothers have done in the past. The Marquez brothers, you know, the Klitschkos, is pick up titles at the same time, you know, and be dominant champions. That should be fun.
Yeah,
they've moved Adrian Broner's date. I'm trying to track down Steve right now.
Speaking about Adrian Broner, what's up with this guy calling somebody chubby, dude? You couldn't even make weight for the Escobedo fight.
I wouldn't be making fat jokes right now.
I wouldn't be making any fat jokes, you know. And his team behind him, you know, because I was sent this video, and you know, some fight fans were like, Dave, what do you think about this? And I was like, this is what you call just, he's a comedian. To me, he just kind of fell into that whole comedian limelight. And his whole, and this is when we talk about yes men, the guys that are behind the scenes going, yeah, 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 tell how it is, bro. Tell it how it is. That's just, that's the definition of what a yes man is, you know? Nobody decided to drop him a note, pass him the memo like, bro, you didn't make weight there. So who's chubby? Who's really chubby too? You know, there's no room to point the finger at a guy that couldn't make weight. Here's the difference with, and I, you know, I've liked both guys. I like both styles. You know, I like both dudes with what they bring to the table, you know, and, but here's the thing is that Rios at least try to make weight. You didn't even want to make the weight.
Yeah. He made weight, you know, the next day too. You know, they made that agreement and he made that weight. So he kind of, you know, double sacrificed. You know, people don't get how hard that is, man. So I heard like a, yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know. Yeah, I would, if I were Adrian Broner, I wouldn't be making up weight. The thing that was kind of distracting my mind there for a second is Robert Guerrero is looking for a fight, and he's looking for a fight with a big name. Broner actually does draw. You know, he certainly draws at home, and I don't know where they would do the fight. I think even if they did it in Robert's backyard, you know, San Jose, or they did it in Oakland,
I think it'd be huge.
It would be huge.
It'd be huge.
You do it at 140.
But I, when we talk about numbers, though, I would have to edge it for Broner, and honestly, it would be a smart thing to keep it over where Broner's hometown is at.
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati, man. I think he draws a little bit more than what Guerrero has been able to do. I don't know. I would have to go back and look at those numbers to argue.
I don't know.
On that.
I haven't called the Natty Commission. I'll have to give them a call and see. You know, and well, I don't, Robert's numbers, I think, will grow. I think they were reflective of the fact that he's been out for a while. And he hasn't had that period of time where, you know, as of late, where, you know, he's had a fight and then another fight, like build, you know, momentum. Oh, here comes Robert again. You know, you have to train. Audiences need to be trained to come. And you can't train them to come, you know, like once a year. You know, you've got to do it often. It's not a criticism of Robert. It's, you know, circumstance. If ever there was a victim of circumstance, it's, you know, it was him. But I think going forward, They should look for a fight that, you know, fight as soon as possible. When's the next date available? Let's get out there and let's do it, and let's do it locally. Build some momentum so you can be. Being a draw is power. Broner's got a little bit of that power. I think his numbers, like, you know, you're suggesting, are real, and they can only grow. His every day he does something different. But I think it's a very good fight. I think it's a very doable fight. And either side, in my opinion, has no reason to pass on it. You know, especially if they can find them a belt to fight for, you know, at 140, they should do it. I don't know if Broner should jump all the way to 147. Maybe they do it at a catch weight so that you can do it for Robert's belt. You do it at 141, 142, you know, who knows. But I think it's a logical fight, and it would also be interesting if Robert, like, took out, you know, the heir apparent to Floyd. It's a great way to point at Floyd and say, all right, I took out mini Floyd. I want the whole meal. You know, but that's just me. I'm
right.
I'm CNN.
There you no no I you know I don't you know we always kind of shrug our shoulders and give that little sour look that we've been into a lemon when we hear about catch weights. But in my opinion, this is a catch weight that actually wouldn't give me the sour look. It would give me that, hey, I'm thirsty for another beer look. Yeah, let's make this happen, you know?
I just don't care anymore. You know, people tell the catch weight. Oh, God, this is terrible for the sport. Just, you know, there's so many other things that are terrible for the sport. You know, I just want to see a good fight. You know, it's been so long. Let's see a good fight. And I think it's a good matchup. Southpaw is good for that style. I think that Broner's employing. Robert's got speed. He's got range. I think he's got strength. I think he particularly will have strength at 140. You know, I know I'm being called ridiculous for that claim of saying he went all the way to 147 for no reason, or he passed up on advantages. But I firmly believe that. I think he would be stronger at 140. Then he's going to find himself at 147. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, you know, and to an extent, it could be agreeable, but then it also can be debatable. Let's add, though, before we even get into that there, I want to touch on that because, you know, even though that statement was made by you, I had the snow avalanche coming down too, you know, and you know, that's how it goes. I say something, you get the avalanche. You say something, I get that avalanche. You know, we always have to kind of dig ourselves out of something that has been misinterpreted.
I said, I'm not a professional boxer. I'm not a manager or any of that stuff. I'm just a writer. That's my opinion,
right? And I think people forget that. This is an opinion, you know. The way to change an opinion is by
prove me wrong,
proving them with facts, and getting in the ring and doing what you're supposed to do, which is fight in the ring, leave it in the ring.
Well, I think this is the thing that that camp kind of confuses is when I say it's not going to happen. It's not that I don't think you are capable of doing it. You're confusing those things. I'm looking at all the factors. It's possible that Floyd kind of says, let's you know, I'll fight Robert Guerrero. It's very possible.
Absolutely.
He fought Robert, Victor Ortiz out of nowhere. To me, it just isn't probable. I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't know. I think that.
And I think, like, for me, in the interim, it's like.
I think for Floyd, Floyd's mind frame is to keep the zero intact, is that if there's enough buzz and. That's my problem with is that an 80-in is not going to get you to that point. That's not enough buzz. You know, the buzz with Ortiz, what landed him the Mayweather fight was by beating Berto, an undefeated welterweight kid, and beating it with great fashion. You know, it was an exciting fight. And Floyd is a businessman. He understands that numbers are going to draw, and those numbers made those that fight alone gave it enough buzz and gave it enough meat on that bone that people were going to nibble at by saying, like, whoa, he's going to be fighting a guy that beat Berto, dropped Berto. This is a tough fight. That's a selling point. With Guerrero fighting 80, and it was a great performance. But was it really a performance where we're going to go, I'm sold on that? It is that extra push down that uphill, you know, because you got to remember, moving up in weight, you're fighting bigger guys that draw bigger numbers with bigger money at times. So that push up the hill is not that easy. You know, you have a great team pushing you, but at the same time, you have to have that great performance to get you to that top of that hill. Then we find out if you belong in that elite. But I want to add, you know, somebody that's a friend of the show and gives us a great report here on Leaving the Ring. We're going to call in Mr. Steve Kim.
I'm loving how upset all the UFC fans are about this John Jones fight getting canceled.
Steve, what's up, brother? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring.
Oh, my goodness. Gentlemen, how are you? Good Thursday to you.
Hey, good Thursday to you too, brother.
how funny is this, watching all the UFC fans be upset about John Jones deciding not to take a fight?
Well, it's interesting. And I started up a little bit on Twitter, but I just remember I've heard for at least 5 years that if Dana White was running boxing, that we'd have Pacquiao Mayweather 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, that we'd be working on a 7-game set, and he has the, you know, omnipotent powers to make any fight happen. You know, he does. If the UFC and boxing had the exact same structure, which they don't, if he was allowed to be both Bob Arum and Richard Schaefer combined in America, where he was the only game in town, and the pay structure was similar to that of the UFC, and the elements and the dynamics were the same, that is absolutely true. But it's not. And just think about the difficulties that they're having now in a certain degree in terms of growing their brand. And now fighters actually kind of, I think, opening their eyes and thinking to themselves, wait a minute, do I need real representation here as I'm taking these wages that don't seem in line with the success that I'm hearing from Dana White? Because I've written this before, guys, and I've said it. The problem with boxing is that it overpays too many of its guys. It really does, okay? But the problem with the UFC is it's inherently stilted against the performer so that most of them don't probably get paid what they're worth. So boxing and the UFC / MMA, they are both flawed in different ways, and they both have similar problems. And I think it's a reality check for UFC and its fans. But I just find it funny, guys, when UFC fans rip boxing – boxing fans pretty much say, you know what, you have a point. But when it's the other way around, boy, they get their panties in a bunch, don't they?
They really do. It's really funny to watch. These guys are very, very upset. And I'm like, hey, I'm fine with John Jones not fighting Chael Sonnen. You know, the guy does testosterone, for God's sakes. You know, if he was going to fight another guy, Henderson in it. But to me, I have no dog in the hunt. I'm just kind of like smacking them and watching them get all upset.
And, you know, 2 weeks ago, I wrote an article saying that the MMA / UFC is superior in one sense. They don't have such a mentality where records have to be so pristine. I wrote a whole article saying boxing can learn from this, that sometimes a 16-5 against a 21-3 is a better fight than two guys who are 30-0.
Right.
The pound-for-pound syndrome that we're getting with Bradley Alexander, and I think what we're going to get with Ward Dawson. And I like their presentation, their packaging, and the production of the events. I like the fact that those in charge can actually – market and give back to the sport in terms of promoting it, because the pay scale is much different. But it is interesting. The UFC, I don't want to say they have a free ride, but they've been in a honeymoon period with their whole industry. But as this goes on into the process, because let's be real, the UFC is not going anywhere. They're here to stay. But as you go on to the process, staying power is very difficult to have, guys. Remember 5 years ago, the NASCAR was supposedly going to rival the NFL in popularity? Well, since that point, NASCAR's ratings have dipped. And if you look at the UFC ratings, they are now having a very, very peculiar problem. And I talked to an insider about this, that now they may have actually oversaturated the market with their ambitions. And everyone assumed that having fights on Fox, regular Fox, which is quote-unquote free TV, was going to be this death knell for boxing. But as you've seen the ratings, they have been very disappointing at best.
More and more I'm running into people that really aren't into the UFC anymore. I'm running into more boxing fans than I am. I mean, I don't really hear that cry anymore that they're killing us. I think their numbers are just kind of bringing that out. They're not.
You know, I had this conversation, guys, with Kathy Duva last week, and her being a female, she did not want to laugh, but she couldn't help it. But I compared the UFC to that chick at 2 o'clock at night at the bar. You got the beer goggles on. You spent all night here, and you're like, you know what? I cannot let this night go to waste,
right,
okay?
Right.
And you're like, oh, Jesus. And you have that one-night stand with her. You might call her back once or twice. You might see her again, maybe a couple more times. But you know what? That's just kind of – it's a guilty pleasure that you don't really want to talk about, right? And boxing is kind of like that girl that you wife up.
Right.
You know, for all its problems, she's not perfect, but that's the one you want to have that lifelong relationship with, even when she puts on those extra 10 pounds that she's never taken off.
Right.
It happens.
It does. You're absolutely right about the 2 a.m. and your fist pump, and you look for that last chick. You're fist pumping, looking for that last chick, you know?
That's very funny. Wow, we just turned into love lines.
Yeah, guys, a couple of updates I got here working the phones. And by the way, me and Gabe now are in the same boat. I don't think Richard Schaefer's talking to either of us. I guess he wants writers to be stenographers for him. I guess I've been a little bit too mean to his company over the last month or so. So for some reason, they're not calling me back, but I'm still able to get some information. It looks like the Anselmo Moreno-Abner Mares fight that was scheduled to go October 13th and was going to go up against a very good HBO show at the Home Depot Center, that is going to be moved, according to a couple of sources that I talked to very close to that situation. I think there's a very good chance it'll land November 10th or the 17th, and I believe the Staples Center is in the running. They want to have that summer in L.A., and I think that's the right move. I think common sense played out here from both Golden Boy and Showtime. Because I love Mares Moreno, but let's be honest, guys, that was going to be overshadowed by Rios Alvarado and Donaire Nishioka. And so that's going to be an issue. Also, a situation that I kind of kept my finger on is that Adrian Broner was supposed to fight October 6th. And I think after the fiasco that took place in Cincinnati, I think the HBO higher-ups kind of put their foot down and said, we can never have this again to this degree. Now, what I was told was that Al Haymon and Golden Boy and the Broner management, they were trying to shove down Ray Beltran or Carlos Molina, who I think are two pretty decent fighters, but I'm not so sure you could really headline an HBO main event with it coming off what happened in July. They have officially moved that back to November 3rd along with Seth Mitchell and Jonathan Banks, and I was told that they are going to try their best to make a Guerrero fight. I don't know what weight they're going to do it. Broner seems to get to kind of, you know, make up the weight as he goes along. But if I'm HBO, I make it very clear. There's going to be three or four guys that we will approve. And if you don't want to meet any of those guys, you are free to go on and do your career, but without HBO on this particular night. And I think that they're halfway home in terms of setting a certain standard by backing up the date. Now they got to fulfill the other half of the equation by making sure there is a representative opponent on the opposite side of the corner of Adrian Broner that night.
If they don't, I mean, how angry is a guy like say Ludabella going to be? You know, who basically had this happen. They had a mandatory defense that HBO wouldn't allow him to do, and he ended up in the same situation. Like, hey, you know, your fighter needs to fight. He has obligations. That's not necessarily HBO's fault. Do you think that this landscape's going to change? I mean, we had such hope when everything switched over. You know, the Steven Espinoza went to Showtime, and Ken Hirschman went over to HBO. But it seems like the same old same. Do you think it's going to change?
Right.
Gabe, at the beginning of your statement, I thought you were talking about our election. There's a lot of similarities. I don't want to get political here because, you know, I don't make enough money to be a Republican, okay? Let's be
right.
honest.
Yeah.
But we all had a lot of hope. Right? Hope was the big word, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That the new leadership, things are going to change. And believe it or not, guys, and again, I think it's a little too early to judge the administration yet, because I actually like some of the stuff Steven Espinosa has done, like the triple headers, the Showtime Extreme. I actually like some of the fights that he's buying, but we kind of know what template he's under to fulfill. Ken Hirschman, I've been told by several people that are kind of on that HBO side, have said, Steve, we don't know if he's any better than Ross Greenberg. That's scary to me. That really is. And I did an article a couple of days ago, the Soapbox, where I used the reader's email, Matt Swider, and he kind of pointed out maybe things are actually trending down some more. You know, Gabe, that's a very legitimate question. Are things getting better? I don't know, because if you go on Twitter and you ask your followers, Dave, you should do the same thing. Just ask a very simple question. Are you satisfied this year with HBO and or Showtime in relationship to its boxing programming? And when I've asked that question, the pretty overwhelming majority have said no as it relates to 2012.
It's been a crappy year. I mean, some of it's just been, you know, pure bad luck or bad drugs. But still, the replacements haven't been that great. We've had a few surprises. But overall, yeah, absolutely. As a person that has to watch those networks, I'm not happy. I think some of it is they're turning the corner on talent and what the model is. Before it was that guy that looked good on the poster. It seems like HBO is slowly leaning at least towards guys that are action fighters.
You know what I would do if I'm HBO and Showtime next year? I would say, okay, whatever toxic assets I've had thrown on me or inherited from the previous regimes or previous contractual agreements that I must fulfill, we're going to do it. okay? Because look at some of these Boxing After Darks coming up. You know, September 29th, Lou DiBella, where you have Isaac Chalemba and Zolt Erdai and Edwin Rodriguez against Jason Escalara. To me, that's not what Boxing After Dark is about. But those are holdovers from decisions made by Ross Greenberg. So I don't hold that on Hirschman. But if I'm Hirschman and Steven Espinoza, I start the calendar at January 1st, and whenever my last obligation is for 2012, I tell two companies here that are a big, major part of the problem and could be the solution in Golden Boy and Top Rank, and I say, guys, it's very simple. I have open slots here. I'm not giving anyone a date. I'm not doing any appearance fights. I'm going to make the deals with the best fight possible.
Right.
And this insular stuff, unless I'm getting Rios Alvarado or Moreno Mares, that caliber of fight, don't even think about it. That's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to draw the line, because one of the things, Dave and Gabe, that is very worrisome to me going into the future, now the networks are taking sides in this Cold War. And if, unless you want two separate leagues of boxing, that's not a good thing, because eventually what's going to happen is, as it's happened to Mayweather and Pacquiao, every marquee fighter eventually is going to run out of some opponents. And we're already starting to see this on Twitter saying, God, I'd like to see this fight, but that guy's either with Golden Boy and Top Rank, so we can't make that fight. And in the long term, that is a losing proposition for the business of boxing.
Oh, yeah, what do you think about this? I was sitting with we were talking about this earlier before you came on the show. We were talking with a guy from USA Boxing, and they're talking about taking the headgear off now, starting in January, and going to the 10-point must system. He said the main problem with our team is that, and the team's past, is that we don't have enough money to send these guys into international competition, and those guys know how to do the computerized system. But now we're moving towards more of a professional system. How do you think that's going to impact us?
You know, last week I included an email from Kathy Duva, who has a very intimate knowledge on how to develop Olympians, how to market them, since her company back in 1984 probably did the best job of marketing a group of Olympians ever back in 1984.
Right.
When they made their pro debut on primetime on ABC with Breland, Meldrick Taylor, Pernell Whitaker, and Evander Holyfield. And she actually said, you know, there's a couple of factors. She said, number one, that the Russian states are now fractured, so it's a deeper pool of international talent. But she also brought up what you did, Gabe, that back then when Meldrick Taylor and Pernell Whitaker and those guys were going through Olympic glory, our national teams had a lot more resources in order to travel abroad. So they would have these tournaments or meets with Cuba, Canada, Puerto Rico, whoever it was. And they used to be on ABC, I remember, as a kid, watching them on ABC Wide World of Sports. So what you spoke of, I think, is key, that in theory we could say we need to have deeper squads, set the teams sooner so they could travel. Like, look at our dream team in basketball. They play a series of games before they hit the Olympics. But again, without the resources to fund USA Boxing, that's just a pipe dream. And historically, the thing that's alarming to me, guys, and I wrote an article on this, you go back to 2000, we had a pretty good team. I was there every match. I was in Sydney as the researcher for Teddy Atlas and Marv Albert. So I was literally there through the agony of watching what amateur boxing had become by then.
Oh.
But that team still had medals. They had Brian Valoria, who didn't even medal, but he's still a world champion.
Right.
And you had Jermaine Taylor. You had Ricardo Williams, who won a silver. Rocky Juarez, who won a silver. And that team had a pretty good pro run as a group, if you include Jeff Lacy. But, guys, look at it from 2004, 2008. There is a sharp decline in the professional production of our Olympians. That we cannot blame on the computer system. So maybe the talent pool is not as great. So now we have to look at two separate issues from the grassroots level. Number one, is the participation down? I think it is. Most people will tell you from 30 years ago, less men are now boxing than they were before. A lot of that has to do, if you go socioeconomically, to segregation. There was a time when African Americans did not have the opportunities to play certain sports and go to college. That dynamic has completely changed. And second of all, then comes the coaching issue. So no matter how good or bad the talent is, you still need coaches. And I'm just wondering, and I'm not trying to disparage a whole generation of trainers, but, guys, do you see a young Kenny Adams? Do you see a young Pat Nappy that you think should lead our USA Boxing team? I'm not so sure I really do.
I'm, you know,
That's
not
a good
sure
point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to take a guy that wants to, you know, invest like 4 years of his life in this team and help get them the kind of international experience. They need to get behind. They need more sponsorship. I was sitting with a guy that's kind of his job is a financial guy over there. They need a lot of help. You know, it would help to have maybe some of the professional fighters really, you know, not just send equipment, but like get involved financially. Throw them $100,000. You know, it costs $100,000 to send the team over for every tournament. You know, and that's a lot of money. And do we need them to go to the Olympics? Do we need that international experience?
You know, let me ask you this. Do you think right now a young, talented guy like Jesse Magdaleno that seems to be taking off like a rocket ship, do you think he looks at his career right now and saying, you know what, I would have much rather done it my way where I'm, 12-13-0 on the verge of some very big things under the top rank umbrella, or did I want to be that guy that got robbed by an Azerbaijan judge? Just think about it. And that's the thing that was interesting about all the UK fans thumping their chests at me on Twitter saying that we've done this, we've done that, we've won all these medals. I look at those guys and I said, yeah, but there's a downside. You have to watch these guys stink out the joint for the next 10 years. I'm still a professional boxing guy. When it's all said and done, in our country, we judge and we define our fighters by what they do as professionals. If Rashi Warren becomes this great pro and he wins a couple of world titles, the fact that he went 0-3 in the Olympics will be quickly forgotten about. That's the God's honest truth. Because Mark Breland and Howard Davis were probably our two most decorated amateurs ever in the modern times. But we don't remember him. We remember the guy that he beat to get to the Olympics, a guy by the name of Aaron Pryor.
Yeah.
I mean, Eric Griffin beat Mark Two Sharp Johnson. Henry Tillman beat Mike Tyson. I can go on and on with those types of comparisons. But I think USA Boxing does have a problem in one sense. Gabe pointed out, number one is the funding. But number two, you know, a lot of these kids, and it's not just the heavyweights, okay? But we are losing a lot of talent to other sports because not every football player is 6'5", 250 pounds.
Right.
I see a lot of wide receivers and cornerbacks that you kind of look at their athleticism and you say to yourself, what happens in his life 10 years ago? He walks in and decides he wants to be a welterweight.
Right.
Yeah. That's true. There was a guy, speaking of guys with, you know, deep amateur records, Gennady Golovkin. He's like 350 and like 5. Mm-hmm. He's 30 years old. He's barely getting his HBO thing. I know you visited and watched him spar yesterday. Could you care to share your thoughts on it?
Yeah, what an impressive guy he is. And he's got this boyish charm. I think he's very promotable, and he speaks very strong English. His improvement in English from the time I met him on the weekend of the Pacquiao-Bradley fight, where there was a breakfast function for him the morning of the fight, to now is very impressive. And his style is very fan-friendly. In fact, I call him the white Mexican, because he has a very fan-friendly Mexican style. He likes to close the gap on the inside. He throws a hellacious left hook to the body, and he's got a strong right hand. And he was sparring with a couple of cruiserweight guys in light heavyweights, Ryan Coyne and another guy that actually fought for the Matadors. I forgot his name.
David Amosery.
That's exactly his name. And I have to tell you, they each went 4 rounds, and by the end of the 3rd and 4th rounds, I know which guy wanted to go more. And Golovkin is actually having problems, according to his trainer, Abel Sanchez, in keeping smaller guys in the gym because he simply is too strong for them. And Golovkin's the type of guy that he doesn't want to take advantage of lesser foes. And he says the problem is when I start getting him with smaller guys, he doesn't like to throw punches. I think Golovkin has a very good run in him. Do I think he's going to be special? I was asked that on Twitter. I really don't know. But I know one thing he's going to be. He's going to be fun and entertaining. He's got a very fan-friendly style. And he's a very nice personality. And in talking to Tom Loeffler of K2, they're not going to just fight twice a year on HBO every 7 months. They are going to fight internationally as much as possible using their K2 connections in the Ukraine, in Europe. And they're going to try to put the world in world championship coming up here in the next year. So I think it's going to be a very, very fun ride with Gennady Golovkin.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see him. Sanchez was talking about there was a really big – there was a cruiserweight got there. He wouldn't give me the name. And he was talking to Ryan Coyne, who's there. I think he's a light heavy and been the main sparring partner. And Gennady's off in the corner getting ready, and the cruiserweight's like, who am I sparring? Am I sparring this guy? Pointing to Ryan. And they said, no, you're sparring that guy over there. And he's like, that little guy? And Ryan was like, don't let him hear you call him a little guy. And that guy went home the next day. Just couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, Golovkin, I'm telling you, is a very friendly guy. He's got a nice look to him. He's very promotable. God, you want to hear something funny? You got to get a tape of that conference call yesterday between the involved on that September 1st show. It's a classic Gary Shaw moment, Dave. When someone asked him, how come with Prosko being Polish, this fight's not in Chicago or something? Gary Shaw blurts out, because it's in New York. That's the Sharif right there.
The Sharif. That's great. Yeah, because it's in New York. Oh, okay. I mean, it didn't seem like, optimum, listening to Tom. They're at the Turning Stone Casino. They kind of want to build from there. I think the Garden is expressed interest in Gennady. He does seem, confident that they can kind of tap into the Kazakh and Russian audiences in Chicago and New York. It would make sense for this one to have gone to Chicago. But
Tom actually told me on the way back yesterday, he was very close to buying out the gate and then sticking it in Chicago at the UCI Pavilion, which had a very good turnout for the Glenn Johnson retirement fight, and using a local promoter by the name of Dominic Pasoli of 8 Count Productions, who is a very good local promoter. But at the end of the day, the TV packagers kind of got their way. But, this is step one. It's to get on HBO, and he's fighting a very respected guy, Gregory Proksa, who I think with his movement and his athleticism, that is not an easy fight. I think that's going to go some rounds. If he got him out of there early, I would actually be very surprised, as much as I like Gennady Golovkin. And, we'll see where we go from there. But one thing that's interesting about a future fight, the winner of Gil Sturm, they are mandated by the WBA to fight the winner of Proska Golovkin by the end of the year. So we're going to see if Sturm, if he beats Gil, which I expect him to, if he will actually ever step in the ring with Golovkin. Because if you look at the timeline and you look at the actions, they've done everything in their power not to face Gennady Golovkin.
I think he's going to knock Proksa out late. It's going to take some time, but I think he's just going to break his ass down and knock him out. I think he'll do the same thing to Felix Sturm. But I don't think Sturm's going to want any part of that. But
Sturm may move up, Gabe, to fight the winner of the Stieglitz-Abraham fight. That seems to be the word out there in Europe.
Yeah, I would think he would probably do that. Like, yeah, fine, dude, take the belt. I'm out of here.
Dave, I got a question for you. You're much closer to this situation. Is there any buzz for Ward Dawson? Please let me know.
I got to tell you the truth. I'm not really hearing a whole lot about it.
What a stunner. What a stunner, Dave. No, really.
I know. And you know what's the bigger stunner is that we're not going to be there. We're going to be in Riverside on that night. We're not going to be out there covering that fight. We'll be in Riverside with Henry Ramirez covering his fighters. So there goes part of the big party going to Ward and Ted Dawson.
Well, let me ask you this, Dave. Would you have done this? Let me ask you, how much of that has to do with the fact that Henry Ramirez is a hell of a guy and usually buys all the drinks, or the fact you don't want to see Ward Dawson?
I'm going to tell you this. I want to see the Molina fight much more than I do want to see the Ward and Dawson fight. Though I'm intrigued by it now. I'm a little bit more intrigued by it. But is it one of those things where I want to pick up and I feel like I'm missing out on something that could be a possible...
I do. Actually, I kind of do. I like both those fights. I'd like to be there.
Yeah, but if this is something you can miss and go, I could watch it on TV. Do I have to be there live? I don't know.
Dave,
have that sense and feeling.
Gabe, I'm with you on Molina DeMarco. I mean, I spent a lot of time at the 10 Goose Gym last week with Joe and Johnny, and they seem to have hit their stride again. There's no hard feelings over this reunion. And they're in a very good place, especially Johnny. He seems to be very, very fit mentally and physically, ready to go. And he flat out told me, Steve, don't doubt me. I know I'm the underdog, but I feel good about this fight. And Joe's also very confident. I think that fight is fine. And I've said this and I've tweeted it, Dave, and I've said this to Gabe many times. The fight I'm looking forward to on September 8th is the Machine, Lucas Matisse, against Jose Olusegun.
Because
that's one of my favorite fighters. Ward Dawson, to me... you really have to enjoy a certain style of boxing. And here's what I think, because I know Gabe, I think, are you sticking with your upset special of Chad Dawson?
Yes,
Gabe?
I think so. Yes, I am.
In my opinion, and I was talking about this with Jonathan Banks yesterday, the heavyweight out of Detroit that's going to be fighting Seth Mitchell, who has a very bright boxing mind. He likes Ward in this fight, and he likes him a little bit easier than most people. But if Gabe's prediction comes true, you would have to suffice that Andre Ward, for the first time, is fighting a guy that's every bit as athletic as him, has a very high boxing IQ, and has very good length and height. And you look at Chad Dawson, say what you want about him. He's a very good athlete. He's got good reach,
right,
and he's got good boxing IQ. If he keeps it on the outside and he doesn't let Ward smother him,
I agree.
It may be effective, but here's my point. Is it going to be exactly a barn burner? I'm not saying it has to be Gaddy Ward. I'm just saying that it may be one of those fights where unless you have a vested interest in either fighter, you may be turning off that clicker to another channel to watch college football game day or game live or the highlight shows by 9 o'clock. That's all I'm saying.
This is what I'm saying. I'm saying the co-feature, in my opinion, is going to be the feature. And
yes,
you're going to end up seeing a lot of people logging off. If that fight with Dawson and Ward does not live up, you're going to see a lot of people falling off on that channel and switching over to whatever's on another channel.
For me, I think if for Chad Dawson to win the fight, for my scenario to come true, I think it has to be actually a little more exciting and dramatic fight than if Ward is winning. If Ward is winning, that means he's shut down his offense. He's kind of clutched to him, moving inside and kind of grinding it out in slow fashion. For Dawson to be winning, he's going to be keeping Ward on the outside on the end of that jab, setting up long right hands and maybe a hook here and there, and he's going to have to make Ward take chances because he's the smaller guy or the shorter guy. I think it's going to be a better fight than you guys realize.
I don't think it's going to be a bad fight, trust me. What I'm saying is that it's not one of these fights that I'm just going to drop whatever I'm doing and feel like I'm going to end up missing a Corrales and Castillo fight. That's not my sense. This is a fight that you can DVR, go back, and I feel like I'm not going to miss it if I find out the results, you know. But here's my thing with Dawson. I'm not picking Dawson to win this fight. I'm picking Ward. But I think that Dawson has, in his resume of opponents that he's faced, has been more value than Ward has been doing. This is a big step for Ward. But at the same time with Dawson, how we asked him last time he was on was, we've seen big guys move up in weight, and they try to move back, and it's damaged them. How much damage, if he's not properly losing that weight, is gonna affect him on September 8th?
That's the question. I mean, if you look at Chad Dawson, he is a sizable fighter. The one thing that stood out to me, guys, when he fought Bernard Hopkins the first time at Staples Center, was when they took off the robes and they met in the center of the ring, Gabe, we were there both ringside.
Yeah.
Wasn't Bernard dwarfed by Chad Dawson at 175?
Yeah. He is a big man. He's a very big man. I just think, you know, you've talked about it, but him being the Ward possibly being chinny, or I think he's kind of gotten used to being in the pros. I think there's a certain, like, it's sort of like a wide receiver or, you know, a young football player gets dinged up the first couple of years, getting used to the brutality of the league at a professional level, and then they kind of smooth out or they flame out of the league. I think Ward is past that. I think he can take a good shot, but I think Ward or Dawson at that weight, he's going to get that advantage of being a very strong 168-pounder.
We'll see. Boy, you know, it's so, you talk to any fighter, they'll tell you they could always lose the first 4 or 5 pounds of the last 7 or 8. It's always those last 2.5. I remember talking to Buddy Roach about it the day of the Vicente Escobedo-Adrian Broner fiasco, and he said, Steve, there's no doubt in my mind that Broner's body simply shut down, but he could probably make weight, but he didn't want to. You know, it's easy for a guy like Chad Dawson to say right now, hovering around 177, 78, saying, you know, I feel great right now. All fighters feel okay 2 weeks before the weigh-in.
Right.
10 to 15 pounds from that weight. It's when you – if you ever talk to him before or after a weigh-in, boy, those guys look like death. And I've seen it.
Exactly.
You can just see it in their body structure, the way that their cheekbones are really like sunken in almost, or their eye sockets. You can see it in their skin and the way they talk. And that's going to be the factor. If Chad Dawson is not too diminished by being at 168, I think we do have a real fight.
I think so too. You know, and I also think that for Chad, in my opinion, for Chad to beat Ward, he's got to make it into a boring fight. You know, I don't see him, you know, when he fought Hopkins, to me, he needed that extra that Hopkins was throwing. That added fuel made him be bad. With Ward, I just don't see him kind of stepping up. There's no intriguing. There's no sense of him going, I have to hurt this man. And
oh, I get that sense.
I don't know.
Do you really?
I do get that sense.
Really?
Yeah.
From Chad Dawson? Really?
Yeah, no, we had him on, and I think he understands. And I've talked to Ice privately. I think they understand that. I mean, Ward's from Oakland. You're going to have to let him know that you're there in the ring. I mean, bottom line, gold medalist, you know, son of God, all that stuff. He's from Oakland. You're going to have to hit him in the face and let him know where you're from. I think they get that. They're going to be the bigger guy. They're dealing with a guy that's very tactile in there. It's very physical. It grabs at you and tries to wear you down. Like, you're dealing with a young Hopkins. He fights the way Hopkins does when he's old, but you know, he's a young guy. I think
they get it, too.
Yeah.
I think they get it, too, but getting it and performing it are just two different things.
No, they absolutely are. And another question, you know, everyone's trying to say that Andre Ward is the next star. You know, I think people have to understand there's a big difference between being very, very good at what you do and being a star. A star is a guy that moves the needle, that has a Q rating. And Dave, just from being out there much closer to that situation than I am, do you think, and I've had discussions with this about people in the business, Dave, in your opinion, do you think they sell 8,000 legitimate tickets to the Oracle that night?
I find that I don't think they will.
Because I tell you what's a disturbing trend, and I was shown these numbers by someone that actually called the commission and has gotten the numbers. You know, the last three Ward fights, their gate total in terms of the total revenue has gone down from about 450 to hovering around the 150s. That's a very disturbing trend to me, guys. If you're saying
right.
that this guy's a star, that from the time he fought Edison Miranda, a fight that I think you were at, right, Gabe?
Yeah.
And had a very sizable audience, that thing has declined steadily in the last 2 years.
It also to me, it shows a perfect picture of this guy needs the opponent as well.
Yes, he does.
To make a venue be packed. A star doesn't need that opponent. A star can basically just show up, and you're going to have an audience.
Well,
yeah.
I think the guy that wins spectacularly in this fight is the guy that has potential to build something and go on to do something. I mean, if it's Chad,
absolutely.
Unfortunately, he can go back home, I guess, and fight near his hometown. I don't know
he's with Gary Shaw. He's going to fight in an Indian casino. Let's be honest.
That's the problem. That's another question. Is Ward winning probably better for boxing because he's a regional draw?
No, listen, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Listen, Gabe, this is like bizarro world, Dave. Think about this. September 15th, I'm picking Sergio Martinez. Gabe is picking Chavez. You want to talk about an alternate universe that has both of us very confused? I've been a critic of the way Martinez has been handled, you know, basically TV packaged by my good friend Lou DiBella, and some of that hasn't been completely his fault because it's been an unlevel playing field with the network.
Right.
But a victory for Chavez, I think, absolutely makes him a franchise, not on the level of Pacquiao or Mayweather, but he's creeping
right.
up on Cotto territory if he can beat Martinez, which, quite frankly, I don't see happening.
Really? You don't see
No,
that?
I don't.
Why?
I don't. I have some questions, guys, based on some of the things that I've been told at Wild Card and the fact that, oh, I've never seen Chavez at Wild Card for this training camp. I mean, that's kind of alarming to me. Here's the thing that got me. And I said this to Aram about 7-8 months ago when Bob tells me, we're going to get him out here. And I said, how? We're going to buy him this. We're going to rent this mansion. It's a beautiful place. And I said to Bob, you really need to buy a guy or rent a guy a luxury home to get him to train? I mean, just think about that. I mean, what did Marvin Hagler once say about not being able to do road work with silk pajamas? And you're buying this guy or renting this guy a $2 million home, which that to me, it's not exactly Marvin Hagler going away to jail like he used to at those resorts in the middle of the winter. And the funny thing was, I mean, there were reports on Fight News that he hadn't trained for 4 days. No, he hadn't trained at Wild Card for 4 days. I mean, Freddie Roach is like the Maytag repairman waiting for the client to come in. And it turned out, from what I was told by people that are there on a daily basis, that Chavez basically turned the living room into a makeshift gym. They have a treadmill. They set up the equipment, and they work mitts there.
What they
didn't
tell you, though, Steve, is that they have a taqueria truck in the front yard.
Well, they probably do. I mean, they probably have a Corona keg in the, off to the side. But the thing that's bothersome to me is I know, and from what I've heard from other people that have been up to camp, I know the way Martinez is training, like a pro, like he always does. He's going to be ready to go. But when Freddie Roach has to go to Vegas to get this guy focused a good 3-4 weeks before the fight, I remember Freddie Roach telling me on Saturday as I went there, he said, Steve, I'm going up to Vegas, but I'm going to tell you this right now. Until I know they're on their way to Vegas, I'm not leaving. I'm not. He says, I'm not going to go driving all the way out there and have them change their minds. And so, but it has been confirmed the Eagle has landed. Chavez is in Vegas working out at the top-ranked gym. So there you have it. But with all that said, I like the more focused professional. I think the foot speed and the quickness of Martinez wins this fight.
And the awkwardness of that, what Martinez brings to. I think there's a lot of factors. If Chavez is to pull this off, I agree, becomes a franchise. If he even puts up a good fight, I still say he moves over to be a franchise. You know, I mean, there's a lot of Mexican people that want to see good out of him. Just like with Canelo, they want to see good out of him. You know, that's, to me, has kind of... When we talk about trainers, and I was going to ask you this, you know, to me, U.S. has kind of dropped the ball, and the U.K. has kind of picked it up. They fumbled it, and they've been producing much more better prospects and a little bit more established champions that are coming over. Is this trend, is this table turning around? Do you see in the future, Steve, you flying out to the U.K. to watch fighters from the U.S., you know, where it's before, it's the U.K. guys coming over here to learn more. Could it be a possibility they're going to end up flying up there to get the proper training and the right instructions?
You know what's funny? You say that, but this week I actually had a chance to talk to a group of guys from Joe Gallagher's gym, a noted trainer, Joe Gallagher, who has a very good roster of hard-nosed fighters led by Scotty Quigg and Matthew Macklin, who's actually not in town. But those guys in Europe, they still look at the U.S. and our boxing society as like the promised land.
Right.
And I've always said, the U.S. has the best boxers, but we have the worst boxing business model.
Mm-hmm.
We can't confuse the two, Dave. And it's interesting that I asked Joe Gallagher, what are you doing out here with all your guys? And he says, easy, we're making a road trip. We're going to learn. We're going to go to different gyms, and we're going to be in the wild card for another week. We're going to go to Azteca. We're going to go to Joe Goosen's. We're going to go to hopefully the Mayweather's if they let us in Las Vegas. And they're basically making it a summer camp, scrimmaging against other fighters, if you want to use that term. I don't know if that trend's ever going to really switch because there's still a belief.
That scares me, though. That's, you know, I mean, look, the guy says, I'm making a road trip. It's basically, I'm making a platform for us to take back. I'm taking a game plan. It's kind of what Dana White did, you know, with his organization. He looked in the boxing, and he goes, I'm going to fix this and that. That, to me, when I hear a guy saying, I'm making a road trip, is basically, I'm going to take the good and take it back.
Right. You know what? You're absolutely right. They may be more open-minded. And it's funny in talking to these fighters like Liam Smith and his brothers and to talking to Paul Smith, who was on The Contender, talking to Scotty Quigg, who I'm very high on. These guys come in with an open mind that we're here to learn and we're going to get better. And by the time we get back to the U.K., we're going to have a huge advantage in terms of our experience and our seasoning.
Right.
And I think that you're right. What you're speaking to is a certain American arrogance as it relates to the sport of boxing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you're right. If for the next 20, 30 years, their boxing establishment understands their shortcomings and improves it, and we're sticking here with the status quo, you're right. Because if you look at where boxing is in Europe, and you look at the type of crowds that they do, and the fact that their television ratings are still strong in areas where they still have terrestrial TV, you bring up a very interesting point. Because I've said for a while that America still has the best prize fighters as of now, right now. If you look at the ratings, you know, whatever you think of pound for pound, the majority of them still come here. Sergio Martinez, Manny Pacquiao, and then we were able to breed a guy like Mayweather and the like. But over the course of time, what's going to happen if there is an erosion in terms of the importance of boxing in our country, you're right. There's absolutely a chance, a significant one, that we may actually lose our dominance in that. It absolutely is a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I think the United States, we've been dropping that ball. We've been concentrating a little bit too much on that fist pumping and looking for the last resort chick at 2 a.m. where these guys are just driving on by the pubs and going to the gym. They're doing their homework, you know.
I mean, look at the middleweight division. You know, America really has no stake in it. There's no guy. You know, where's our guy? Danny Jacobs, you know, he's coming back. Other than that, we haven't really developed like an American middleweight.
You know, the thing is that as long, in terms of the pure fighting, and I've always thought it was interesting, we have guys that fill half a ballroom with 2,000 people, and you have European fighters who fill large halls of 10,000 to 15,000 people, and even the Klitschko, they fill soccer stadiums. But because of the dynamic of the premium cable network, which is completely stilted the economic field for the likes of Andre Berto or anyone else promoted or managed by Al Haymon, what happens is that factor is no longer important. So what's happened for a long time is that Roy Jones could hide behind an HBO contract fighting at the Biloxi, the Redneck Riviera, and never have to fight any of these really good British guys or Darius Mikulchevsky like he did in the prime. Until that dynamic changes, where HBO and Showtime are more in line with the realities of the economics of boxing, which I think they've needed to do for a long time, the U.S. will always have that artificial leverage in terms of where they stand in the boxing place in the United States.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, there you go. You know, Steve Kim, the report, the man, you know, people call you the encyclopedia of boxing. I have to agree with that all the way. Steve, hey, man, again, thanks for calling in. It's always fun. You know, you're always welcome anytime, anywhere. Hey, when we start doing our Ustream live, we got to have you as a third man out for us.
Absolutely. We'll make it happen one day. Absolutely, Dave, I promise.
And Dave, Steve, you know, just we were speaking about losses earlier and what they can do for a fighter. And your old pal, Sergey Zinjerik, he now knows that he can be even more patient and cautious as a fighter. So I'm sure that would make you happy.
Let me just say what's interesting about Zinjerik. And again, you can't blame the fighter. And I don't even blame Gary Shaw. But the reason why we're seeing Sergey Zinjerik against Jonathan Gonzalez, who from what I'm told in Puerto Rico is not exactly Felix Trinidad or Alfredo Gomez, is that not only did HBO, when they're led by Ross Greenberg, pay Zinjerik $850,000 as a license fee. They also said as an incentive to take the fight, we'll give you a guaranteed return to the network, win, lose, or draw against Martinez. As if, guys, 850 large wasn't the incentive enough to take that fight. Again, that's where you have to really look at what are the problems of boxing. It is not the multiple sanctioning bodies. They didn't cause this. It's not Jose Suleiman who did that. That decision was made by someone who's no longer in charge, and that's what I keep preaching about, that people look for straw men like Jose Suleiman or whoever else or Bob Arum and blame them for the downfall of boxing, when a lot of the decisions that directly impact boxing fans and the subscribers to HBO or Showtime are made by those who theoretically should be looking out for the public, but in essence don't.
Right, exactly. Well, Steve, I'll catch up with you one of these days, and probably next Monday, for the return of the next round.
Absolutely, after a 1 week summer hiatus, guys. Great show. We'll talk to you soon.
All right,
all right, man. Take care. It was interesting, and I don't mean to make fun of Mr. Zinjerik. You know, I've always been something of a proponent of his. Kind of like his style, I'm not looking forward to a more cautious version. But the Jonathan Gonzalez fight is really—it's kind of an interesting fight.
I thought it was actually kind of an interesting fight, you know?
Yeah, this kid's kind of a prospect. You don't know if his power is real. You don't know if everything is quite all there. He seems to fade a little bit late. We talked a little bit about that. It was cool, man. We did it at this Russian restaurant down here in Santa Monica Boulevard. I never had Russian food before. It is quite delicious, I have to say.
You know, I always say anything that's free is quite delicious.
True.
Let's get up our fight schedule here, and let's break that down before we go off the air. Really, really quick, be sure to tune in every Sunday night, the Boxing Fix. It's at 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time, and Noche de Boxeo. You know, Noche de Boxeo have been stepping it up with their guests. They're doing a really doing a great, great job. So if you're Spanish speaking, this is for the Latinos to tune in. It's at Monday night. It's at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, and always truly yours, Leaving the Ring Radio. My radio is Thursday night at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can hear Gabriel over there stretching out.
I am.
You know, getting a little out of the neck and the back and stuff.
You have no idea. What a day today. It was just, and the ice cream truck is here. It's just perfect timing.
And also, too, I got to point out that we're not going to cancel another show on out from here. We're going to be on schedule. We're going to be consistent. I know we haven't been. We've been stopping here and there, but I went
it's
down.
Summertime.
It's summertime.
Know?
You know, summertime and then work. You know, I've been working these crazy, crazy hours, and but I was able to talk to my company and say, look, man, you're starting to piss off the boxing heads over here, and it's not fun. You don't want a bunch of boxing heads coming up to your front door, you know, putting a burning boxing glove in your front lawn there. So they agreed. They're like, nope, Dave, go ahead, no problem. Thursdays, you need to get off early so you can do your thing, Leave It on the Ring Radio. And I'm excited for Saturday. You know, Gabe, you're coming down tomorrow night. So we're going to be hanging out watching, you know, is there Friday night fights? We're going to find out right now with our fight schedule. Go ahead and throw it out.
I wasn't working that hard. It's just summertime. At the Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California, Friday night on Showtime Showbox, Randy Caballero, 15-0 versus Manuel Roman, 15-1-3. Underneath there in support, Michael Perez, 16-1-1 versus Fidel Maldonado, 13-1. This is what Showbox is all about. You know, guys that are undefeated, or you know, there's three losses on the card. These guys are all at crossroads. Do you want to go to the next level? Do you want to be on Showbox again and featured on this kind of platform, or do you want to go back to, you know, Telefutura or go back to ESPN's Friday Night Fights? You know, I'm liking Caballero. I think he's just been very consistent. I still want to see more head movement. He still kind of squares up for my taste, but I think his power is real, and he's kind of big and strong for this fight. I really like him in this, so I'm going with him. But I'm going by decision. I think Manuel Roman, he's going to be right there all night.
Yeah, and then you have on that, it's not going to be televised, but you got Leon Love.
J.D. on Love.
He's going to be on that card. And
12-0 versus Roman Valenzuela, 7-1, I expect.
I'm happy to see Randy Caballero get back in the ring. Always been following him. You know, when he turned pro, he's been on the radio with us. And also, too, I got to make a quick shout out to our publicist, Red, our boy Red. You know, he's going through some tough times, and you want to let him know we love you, brother. Just get back on your feet, get your thing going, and you know, we're always going to be supporting you. But going back with Randy Caballero, I think this is a big night for him. You know, Fantasy Springs has been the home for him, the casino in Indio, California. So he's got a lot of family and friends. It hasn't seemed to affect him, 15-0. But also, too, I think that there's an added to that card, knowing that his brothers are going to be on the undercard pro debuting. So there's going to be some nerves, not just for himself, but for his brothers, too. And I think there's going to be some sense of competition.
Yeah, there's certainly that. I mean, I think Randy's, you know, I've been out there a few times before I wasn't allowed to go. And Randy's a guy that, you know, when he fights out there, I mean, even if he's the first bout or the second bout, I've kind of watched the progression as he's moved towards the main event. You would think that he's the main event. The crowd just goes absolutely crazy. They love him. Girls love him. He's just a, you know, great personality, and he's got power. You know, he can really crack. So I think, you know, this fight, you know, I haven't seen Suavecito fight a whole hell of a lot.
Right.
But I've seen him go some rounds, and he's going to be there. I think, I don't think Randy's going to knock him out. I think it's going to make for an action fight. Randy needs to learn how to meet out his energy better, in my opinion, kind of relax and let the fight come to him a little bit, dictate with the jab, but relax and not try to just like
you know, land that big shot, but let that shot come. He's
this
still
is,
losing out.
This
know?
Fighting Emmanuel Ramon, this is honestly, to me, it's a big test. It's not even a big test. To me, it's exactly what you're saying, but at the same time, this is a fight that, being with that layoff and, you know, getting back into the groove of things, you
sure.
better have all your ducks in a row, because that kid, Ramon, is going to – he's going to call you on it. He's going to pull your card. So there's a – to me right now, there's a strong possibility Randy could lose this fight if his mind is not focused and he's not properly prepared and he doesn't learn – if he hasn't figured out those gaps of rest in between – combinations
yeah.
and in between rounds, you know, he's got to simmer down a little bit to make sure he can get himself all the way through. Because I agree with you, I don't see him stopping Manuel. I do see him going all the way through all the rounds. But he's got to be dominant. But at the same time, he's got to be a smart, dominant person in this ring.
Yeah, I agree. You know, he does have a lot of things that he needs to iron out. I think he reminds me a lot of how Joel Diaz Jr. was, I mean, before he went over to Abel Sanchez, and apparently he's much more, you know, his boxing skill is more apparent now. He's not as squared up. He understands that, you know, how to be economical and how to place his shots better. Randy still, I think, is figuring that out. I don't see a lot of science going on with him. He's still a little bit of just a strong athlete. Figuring it out. He still squares up a little bit.
A strong athlete, what a young mind, you know, for he's a young mind kid. You know, I think that's what some folks
yeah.
are forgetting. This he's a kid that's kind of learning. He's got
yeah.
a great pedigree behind him and as an amateur. But when we were talking about amateurs, and Steve brought up a great point, I wanted to add to that point, but we got sidetracked because we're rolling into so many other things, is that just because you got a great track record as an amateur doesn't mean you're going to transcend into being a great pro fighter and stuff. And,
exactly.
And Randy is a perfect example. Have they been matching him tough? They have. I honestly think that here's a kid that has a great – he's a decorated amateur kid. But at the same time, you're starting to see that great decorated medals and what he brought from the amateurs is not really getting them past those tests to the fullest, where you're going like, okay, it benefited him all the way down. You still got to learn. There's still a learning process. There's no learning curve when you turn as a pro.
Yeah, it's we're going to see. I agree with you in that assessment. It's going to be a test. I think, you know, this Maldonado versus Perez, as Linus is pointing out, it's going to be a good fight. I think it's going to be a very good fight. Both guys... young, you know, Maldonado, you know, he got stopped in his last fight back in April. He's coming off of that. And I was definitely surprised by that loss. Kind of came out of nowhere to me. I thought this was going to be a kid on the rise and you know, would get through this phase. Gets caught, gets taken out, and now he's rebuilding. Perez is a meat and potatoes kind of guy. He's going to come forward. He's going to go at you. He's got solid power. He can be outboxed. And I think that's why this is a nice matchup. Maldonado, I think you can crack, but he's going to box more in this. He's going to need to in order to offset the things that Perez does. I'm going with Perez, though. I think he's just kind of like the little engine that could, and I think he overpowers him and kind of breaks him up. And it's going to be a hard – this is a tough guy to shake off a knockout loss against.
I agree with you. You know, I think – absolutely, a little engine that could. I'm going to go with Perez, too, as well. I think, though, that this is the much better fight than the Caballero fight. It should have been switched around as a headliner.
Interesting. And Jay Leon Love, hopefully he gets some clips because, you know, I think people need to see him. I think he's still a little bit of a raw talent, but he's developing in terms of the he's spending a lot of time at the Mayweather gym, surrounded by good people. You know, when you're surrounded by technicians, guys that know how to blend athleticism and speed and power, but also, you know, technique, you know, the defense, the old school ways. I think he can really develop into something. And
right.
He's got a hell of a personality. He's just a good guy. I expect him to pull that one out. In Geelong, Australia, Sam Solomon, 41-11, versus Giovanni Lorenzo, 31-4. They're building him as the new Road Warrior. I like Lorenzo in that fight. Youth will be served.
I like him too. You know, he's a guy that, if my memory serves me right, was beaten when he was undefeated. His first loss was handed to him by Ishusei Smith, right? Is that the same guy? Yeah, it is. So, yeah, too bad it's not televised, though. I'd like to see that fight. You know, maybe it's streamed.
Yeah, I wonder. I never really see a lot of Australian streams. I have seen one before.
I'm hoping it is. I mean, it should be a pretty big fight for over there in Australia. But, you know, then again, we don't know. We'll find out.
No, Lorenzo, he was beaten by Raul Marquez, and then Sebastian Sylvester, Felix Sturm, and Hassan Ndam and GCAM.
There you go.
Most recently. But I think it's just styles make fights, and he's just kind of like a, you know, he's a journeyman at this point, Giovanni Lorenzo, kind of like a guy that's like, you know, he's professional. On any given night, he can give you trouble and win. I think on this night, he's going to give Sam Solomon a lot of trouble.
And Sam Solomon is a tough guy. He's a tough guy to crack too. So.
But I think he's past it.
He's past it. You know what I mean? And I think that he's going to have to get past a lot of things, just not with his skills, his chin and everything too. So it's going to be a tough night for him. I mean, this guy's got 41. You know, Lorenzo's right behind him with 31, but it should be a good fight, you know, fun while it lasts.
Yeah, I think his miles have been a little harder. At the Omega Products International in Corona, California, Dallas Prescott, 25-1 versus Raul Morales, 11-1. And Artemio Reyes, 16-2 versus John Charles, 7-5. At the Whitehall Armory in Whitehall, New York, Savelle Hallback, 28-8-2 versus Victoria Cisneros, 6-13-2. Well, it's grim this weekend, I'm telling you. August 25th, Saturday, 2012, at the O2 Welt Arena in Berlin, Germany, Robert Steiglitz, 42-2 versus Arthur Abraham.
We want the drink. Let me get a Steiglitz.
Exactly. Or something you yell when, like, you hurt your toe. Steiglitz!
Yeah.
I like Steiglitz to win. It's for the WBO super middleweight belt. There is no evidence to suggest that Arthur Abraham is going to win a super middleweight bout.
I think, honestly, Arthur Abraham, we need to see him starring in the B-flicks, horror flicks, you know, with the mummy stance that he does now. Sad to see him kind of go down that route, but, hey.
I want to see, like, a remake of 300. Just put a shield on it, you know,
yeah.
Because that's pretty much what he does. Just comes forward with the shield and rarely pulls out the sword anymore.
Wow. Hope he doesn't do that.
he should do that. I think by court order, he's not allowed to do that anymore. At the Sports Center in Fairfield, California,
yep.
Where Dave and I will be live in person. I've got this whole mesh bodysuit I've got picked out. Telefutura, Manuel Levia, 21-7 versus Alan Sanchez, 10-2-1. In support, Manuel Avila, 8-0 versus Vicente Alfaro, 5-1. Paul Mendez, 8-2-1 versus Lauren Myers, 8-16-1. And Jonathan Chicas, 5-0 versus Jose Mendoza, 7-5. It's going to be – are we going to be outside?
No, it's inside of a building. We'll be inside of a building.
That's good.
Yeah,
I don't.
It kind of looks like a gym. You know what I mean? It's you'll see what I'm talking about when we get there. We'll take pictures and tweet it out to the fans and stuff so they can see where we're going to be at. You know, it's a nice little venue. I mean, it's a pretty good, sizable little venue. You know, they've held their events there, and it gets pretty packed. It gets pretty crowded. So Paco Entertainment and Don Target are doing, you know, in the beginning, I was kind of like, wow, in Fairfield, huh? Why Fairfield? But then when you get there, you'll get it. You'll go, okay, I understand why now. There's a lot of Latinos, a lot of raza there in Fairfield, and it's really in between cities. So it's drivable too, and it gets pretty packed pretty quick. I'm talking about parking. I had to park almost a half a mile in order to get to the venue because it was all – the parking lot was just – you know, bumper to bumper, and to get in. So, but we're going to be there early. It's going to be a lot of fun, man. I think the fights, too, are going to be worthy to speak about. I'm really excited about seeing Alan Sanchez and Leyva. I'm excited seeing Paul Mendez, who's with the Garcias now. So it's going to be a fun night of boxing on Solo Boxeo, and Leaving the Ring will be there. Real quick, follow at Boxing Fix and at Noche de Boxeo on Twitter if you haven't just yet. Go out there and follow them. And like I said, follow their shows. These guys do a fantastic job. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. We're going to be Ustream. This is not going to be on Block Talk, just to let you know right now. We will send out the link for Ustream so that you can see the show that we're going to be broadcasting and breaking down the fights and having a chance to speak to the fighters before they get in the ring on Solo Book Sale. It's the pre-hype to the fight.
I'm very excited. Yeah, this is going to be fun, man. You know, a whole live experience, be there among the people. I've been through Fairfield. I've driven through it many times on the way to San Francisco. So I kind of know what I'm in for. And I always like being in Northern California. I lived there so long. People are great. I'm looking forward to it. Maybe we can swing back through and check out Sacramento or something on the way back home. It's always got a fun nightlife. I'm just looking forward to the whole trip and getting out of L.A. for a few days. So, Dave, I will see you tomorrow.
Absolutely. And real quick, too, you know, for Emily, who's handling our Boxing Fix, at the Boxing Fix Twitter account, follow her as well at Emily Boxing. And, you know, big shout out to her. Thank you very much for helping us out here on Leave and Ring and the Boxing Fix. Anyways, again, Gabriel, it's always fun. And fight fans, thanks for tuning in. It's always appreciative. And have a great night. And I'll see you tomorrow night.
Peace.